other would buy. Doing whatever I had to do to survive. I'm not saying what I did was all right. Trying to break out of the ghetto was a day-to-day fight. Being down so long, yet nothing is off my mind. But I knew there was a better way of life, and I was just trying to find. You don't know what you do till you put under pressure. Cross 110th Street is a hell of a tester. Across 110th Street, pimps try to catch a woman next week. Across 110th Street, pushers won't let the junkie go free. Across 110th Street, woman trying to catch a trick on the
Fugazi? Is that what you're asking?
No, this ain't no Fugazi Hazy. This is the real thing.
All right, welcome to the Matthew Aaron Show. I'm Matthew Aaron, www.thematthewaaronshow.com, at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter, Matthew Aaron on Facebook, and I am not at Jason's Deli this evening, like some people.
No, we're going to Mr. Beef on Harlem. Mr. Beef on Harlem.
Pat Stefano's in the house.
How you doing, everybody?
There's your Mr. Beef comments.
I will say, though, the New York...
Introduce yourself before you
this
start
This is Panzerat, otherwise known as Michael Terzo. How you doing, buddy? Long time
Panzerat.
No see, by the way. You guys should find out. You guys know how I got that nickname?
How?
Okay. There's a great restaurant in Harlem called Pasta Fresh.
Was I not going
to
say restaurant?
They have amazing, amazing Panzerat. So I used to go there, and this is back when I was fat.
Explain to people what Panzerat is.
It's like a calzone, but it's deep fried. It's a slightly different dough. Much more tasty.
Very healthy for you, too.
Very healthy. So, and these things are huge. They're like the size of footballs. So I would get two of them.
I was going to say he's a good
two of them. I would get two of them. Sometimes three.
No way.
And I would eat one in the parking lot. One down Harlem Avenue. If I got the third one, I'd finish that one as I was going down north.
I think Rock Rubin is still like blowing his mind from last week when I told him what you were eating at Luisi's.
Well,
the Polish, the hamburger, the hot dog, the large fry, and the large Italian ice.
You must have a serious case of the hot hole.
You know what? I overcame that back in the great food wars of 1998.
The food wars?
Look at him. Look at him.
Some people talk about Iraq, the Gulf, Vietnam, Terzo, the food wars in 98.
This kid and his violent ass over here.
You do have a violent ass.
It's a sweet ass.
Yeah.
It's violent. You're
except
like a rhino.
For everything that comes out of it.
Oh, boy.
You got nukes shooting out of there.
It happens.
So, you know what I wanted to talk about? Today, tomorrow, is the shuttle's landing, and it's the last day of NASA. I'm sitting with two Republicans. Are you happy they pulled money out of NASA?
No.
No.
No, we need the space program.
Not necessarily.
Really?
No.
Ooh, this is interesting.
Here's the thing. I don't necessarily think we need to shoot, you know, rockets or shoot the space shuttle off and go, ooh, look at us. We're America. We have space shuttles. But what I think we do need, I think we need to continue space exploration and kind of get that going because, you know, you get a country like China or somebody else out there that really starts making some heavy advances. If we get left behind in the dust, it could be a big disadvantage for us. Maybe not now, but 30, 40 years from now.
Oh, absolutely. I completely agree. You need the space program.
Okay. Well, I guess we don't have much to fight about in because...
But they don't need all the money they got.
Okay, but do we need as much money in the defense that we got?
Well, $400 for a hammer.
What do we have in the defense? $500 billion?
$658.
Here's the downside.
I completely agree with you on that too, Matt, by the way.
Yeah, we don't need that.
We don't need that much money.
I'm
cut it in half.
You boys are turning into Democrats before my eyes.
It has nothing to do with that.
No, but you have to remember, the United States is like a business. It's got to be ran efficiently. And by spending $600+ billion on the military, that's too much money. We don't have money. We don't have the money to spend. Why
we
are you
don't have
spend
any
it?
Money right now. We got a debt ceiling crisis because we don't know.
Well, it's not that bad. It's only $14 billion. I mean, come on. How bad is it?
No, that's it.
And counting.
Chump change to Mr. B.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? If I had his finger to keep printing money, I'd be okay, too.
Yeah, what's the deal? Explain to me this. Maybe we should wait for Lenny when he comes by to explain this. But why don't we just keep printing money?
Well,
you want your dollar to be worth
time out. Time out. Yeah,
I just want to know why we don't.
Here's the easiest way to look at it.
Dollar's already worth nothing.
look at it this way. We'll say, like back when it was backed against gold, we'll just look at it this way, make a small analogy, okay? For all the money, all the actual U.S. currency there is in the world, there's only a pot of gold that we'll say weighs 100 pounds, a 100-pound pot of gold.
Right.
If there's million paper monies out there for that 100-pound pot of gold, if they print more money, the pot of gold doesn't get any bigger. There happens to be more paper money out there. Now, if you have $2 million of paper money instead of a million, it's still based off the same 100 pounds of gold. It's just worth half as much now.
Yeah,
Does that seem like
you explained that pretty well, actually.
Yeah. He did. He's good at that.
You did, actually.
He's a car salesman. What do you expect? He'll justify that purpose perfectly, and you did.
How's the car business,
that.
Mikey?
Excellent. You know, as a matter of fact, I look at things like this. There's three levels. Good, you have great, and you got out. Fucking standing.
So you're a good?
And right now it is out fucking standing. As a matter of fact, it's always out fucking
standing. How's that Gerald Ford's treating you?
Kid.
Or Kia's. Kia.
No.
Subarus.
He sold 38 cars this month already.
38?
We're only 20 days into the month.
That's all? Just 38? That's all you've done?
Look, I don't like to keep track. That's not the point.
The kid's like putting crack in the cars or something.
No,
they
but
just keep
what's the place? Gerald Kia and Austin?
It's a Kia Subaru dealership.
Oh, it's not Gerald, though.
I'm not really
sure. Is it Jose's Kia in Ogden?
It's Perillo.
Are you at Perillo?
It is a Kia Subaru dealership.
Why don't we get you a job at Joey Perillo's?
Because you got to understand the marketplace where BMWs are at. There's a lot of online business with
Bentley. Go to his Bentley
time
dealership.
Time out. You got to understand the demographic of who you're going to deal with. It changes the game anywhere you go.
How many Bentleys are you honestly going to sell?
And here's the deal. You got to.
Hey, but you sell one a month. You're good.
You have to look at the culture that's going to be involved with a dealership like that. There's a lot.
I'll have Chaz Palminteri come by. He'll buy five or six Bentleys.
Yeah, okay. Because Chaz needs five Bentleys. What are you going to do? Give them away at the restaurant?
Yeah.
You know what?
Hey, you should.
I'll come in and buy a Bentley from you. I want the hometown discount.
Is the hometown discount?
Well, if it's the same discount we get at Mr. Beef on North Harlem.
Oh, so you're going to upcharge
it's going to be our discount's going to be at the bottom. It's going to say plus 5.6%.
No, I'm going to be honest with you. I'll buy one right now. Take off 85%. We'll call it a day.
Take off 85%.
So what you're saying is you want to.
He hasn't seen a woman take off 85%. And he wants a car at 85% off.
Wait, I got a question. If a woman only takes off 85%, what's the last 15%?
I don't know. What is it? It depends what she's taking
he's
off.
He's never seen a woman like that before.
Well, what if
it's
shoes, though?
No.
See, that's what he thinks
understand.
About, because he's the friend.
Oh, no, Caesar wanted me to correct you. It is 14 trillion.
That is correct.
Not 14
billion. Did I say billion? I meant
trillion.
You know what I meant. I'm sorry. I meant trillion.
There's a small difference.
Thanks, Mr. Producer. You're doing a great job.
Yeah, Pat, you know, move the comic here.
Yeah, keep eating your sandwiches. All right, continue, Thurso.
No, I'm just going to say this. I always look, the last bit is always the most important. So I'm just going to say the 15% is probably bra and panties.
In your case.
It'd have to be.
Okay. What if you're at a nudist convention?
Well, the, you're pretty much...
Maybe the 15%
you know
is shoes
the,
and socks.
The nudist convention is like that. It's like a...
Nudes are popping?
It's like an inspiration. Okay?
You're wrong.
Everybody's at 100% all the time.
No, the 15% is the rubber band holding her hair up.
How come we didn't go to Nudes are Popping last weekend? Too hot.
Nudes are popping?
Too hot in more
like,
of the ways
that
than
like
one.
Papa Dick
I don't know. It's in Indiana, and it's like a nudist festival, but you don't have to get nude to go. Trust me, Terzo, I wouldn't have invited you otherwise.
Have you seen your little girlfriend at the strip club yet?
She went to Nudes are Popping.
No, the strip club.
I know, and she went to Nudes are
Popping. What girl are we talking about? Because I don't know which
Kelsey
one.
Kelsey or Heidi Wood?
No, the other one.
Caroline.
The blonde hair girl.
Heidi.
No, the one that's in the movies, too.
Gretchen?
Lexi Swallow? Oh, Bridget B.
That one.
Oh, you like the Bridget B.
No, I was,
all you
looking, at, I was looking at the picture up there, but that's why I said that.
Yeah, all you should have said was 36G.
Well, I was
or
looking
36F.
At, all I can see is two Matt and a blonde hair girl.
36F.
That, no way. That's too big.
No. Okay.
Are you kidding me?
I want to have this argument because we had it on the Erotica show, but maybe some people didn't listen. Oh. Mikey, when are boobs too big?
For me personally?
Yeah, sure.
For me personally... You know what? It depends on the size of the girl. It depends on the size of the girl because
not the heifers you're taking
no,
home. I'm talking skinny.
If a girl's 5 foot versus a girl who's 5'7", there's going to be a difference there. On a smaller girl, I'm going to say.
But when you're bringing home Horton, here's
what do you think?
A who?
A smaller girl, C.
Exactly. I'm thinking a smaller girl, about a C, and a bigger girl, a D, maybe a double D. And here's why. Here's why. If you're looking at it from a longevity standpoint. Girls who have really, really big boobs, by the time they're 35, 40 years old, let me tell you, boys, they're going more south than anything. Think about it.
Yeah, but they're not going south right the fuck now. Are you looking to get married?
It's like an investment.
Are you looking to get married?
Maybe.
You
never know.
When that comes off, I want it to be like headlights.
I love how our guest hosts obviously don't listen to the show because yesterday I heard my marriage rant. I hope you twos aren't getting married.
Didn't you just propose to some girl and got shut down?
Diane Warren.
What was it, last week?
Well, look at it this
way. What was her name? Stacy?
Are you making people up now?
Yeah, she was like 18.
At least she was
legal.
That's yeah, she said she was 18.
She was really 16, wasn't she?
I don't
she?
Know.
She looked 16.
Wow. I'm sure Megan will propose to Alex soon. That'll be enjoyable.
Yeah.
Turns out I was like, I ain't touching that with a 50-foot pole.
Really?
Well, if it wasn't for Alex, I would, that's for sure.
Panzerats. I like that.
By the way, Pasta Fresh isn't far from Mr. Beef.
No, it's right down the street. Yeah.
You been there before?
No.
We got to go.
Why?
There's a little, it's the funniest thing. You walk
we
in
got
there.
Oh, you mean
there,
the place in the like mall
yeah,
area?
It's
yeah,
it's actually, that little strip
yeah,
mall.
Yeah, it's on the bottom floor,
the
yeah.
The strip mall is actually called Piazza
by Capone's.
A little farther north.
Yeah, yeah, no, I know
no,
where
yeah,
it is,
yeah.
though. Yeah.
Great place.
I think it's Harlem and Belmont.
It's by the bowling alley, actually.
No, it's Harlem. Is it Addison?
No,
it's got to be Addison there.
It's north. It's farther north than Belmont.
So tell me about Pasta Fresh, because I always drive by and
no,
I've never gone.
It's a great little place. You got great stuff. Their panzerats are excellent. But here's an there's like probably a mid-50s Italian lady who runs the counter. She speaks broken English. She's from Italy. Yeah, it's hilarious. And then her mother, who's got to be in her late 80s, early 90s, it works in the back, and she's got one of those giant wooden spoons. Literally, I'm talking about industrial size, like about 4 feet long.
So this is the Italian joint in Grumpier Old Men.
Exactly. And this, I'm serious, though. She has like two Mexicans back there that help her make the pasta and everything. And once in a while, she'll start screaming in
two
Italian.
Two Hispanics.
Mexicans. Sure. And she'll start yelling, and she starts poking them with the spoon. It's the funniest thing. And they look back like they're scared. They don't know what to do.
If someone was poking you with a wooden spoon, what would you do?
Well, if it was a little Italian lady, I'd probably be scared myself.
I don't know. I've seen you turn on little old Italian ladies with a wooden spoon.
Well, when they don't make the food right, there's an issue.
Where's the best meatball in town, Mikey?
Ooh. Mr. Beef on North Arlington, 3917 North Arlington.
Come on.
Shut up.
First of all, they're not homemade.
Yes, they are.
Are they?
Yeah, I make them myself.
What's in them?
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I can't reveal my recipe.
Right. Oh, the private secret stock.
I'm
going to
say one of the best meatballs I've ever had was at Piccolo Sonio on Halstead and Grand.
Okay,
one of the best.
You want to Piccolo Sonio?
My favorite meatball actually happens to be my grandmother's, and I know that
I was just going
right
to
answer.
Hold on.
My grandmother's.
I know that's cliche, but I got an interesting fact for you. My grandmother, when they were in Sicily, they were so broke they didn't even use meat in their meatballs. She started making meatballs with ground up walnuts, and I shit you not, I will bring you some. They're outstanding.
Mikey, you haven't told the Chef Boyardee story on here yet.
What Chef Boyardee?
You will tell the story. Why is it Chef Boyardee?
Well, that was his name. His name was Chef Boyardee, and the stupid Metagons here couldn't pronounce it, so they spelled it out. They sounded it out on the side of the can so people knew.
Pat Tobias says, no one makes Italian food better than the Mexicans.
Pat Tobias and I need to have a little conversation.
You know what? Every restaurant you go to, though, it's that.
You know what? They
it's
can
the
learn. They can learn, but there's a few that I know that
and you know what?
Italian
like some of the guys that work by us. Phenomenal.
Yeah, you may go to Mr. Beef and be like, look at all these Mexicans working here. What do they know about beef? No, they're all Italian. They're just very tan.
But, you know, well, Italians
short.
Are tan, too.
And speak like Speedy
I'm tan.
Gonzalez.
I'm pretty tan. I like to say myself.
Well, you're pretty Mexican.
No, that's just not very
See, nice. what Pat doesn't let you know is that he says all those Mexican cooks are outstanding, but he only has them cook a Mexican food, so.
That is true.
Now, I got a question for Mr. Beef. If these Mexican guys got the secret recipe, right? If they ever leave,
they don't.
One of two things happen.
They don't.
Okay. Well, I'm wondering.
We'll just say this. But they get deported.
Well, I'm wondering, is that it, or are we digging holes in
they
Vegas?
They get deported.
They don't have.
Oh,
the
deported
recipe.
Could mean many things, is what
they
we're saying.
They get deported.
No. They don't have the recipe though.
Oh, they're not allowed.
There's.
I went to an Italian joint last night where the Italian guy had the recipe and the one Mexican worker, and that's it.
No.
And I go, how do you trust the Mexican worker with? Because if he ever leaves, he leaves with the secrets of the family.
Exactly.
Well, how do you think Lou Malnati started?
How did Lou Malnati start, Mike?
Lou Malnati's worked for the guy who owned Uno's and Dewey's in downtown Chicago.
Yes.
And he left.
Yep.
But he wasn't a Mexican. I'm saying this Mexican guy.
No, he was an Italian guy.
Yeah, but I'm saying these Mexican guys got the family secrets.
They don't have the family.
Yeah, this movie was good, and then you know what else was good was Jackie Brown, and you know what wasn't as good was American Gangster.
Well, look, I'm not going to talk about the whole movie, but I'm going to throw this out here. I thought Armand DeSante in American Gangster was outstanding.
You know what?
He's your friend.
Forgive Matt.
What? He is your friend. That's like when I say Chaz Palminteri is great in everything.
No, but I really do like DeSante, and I'll be honest. I can't believe
I like DeSante,
the new guy with the new Gotti role that Travolta got. How could you pass DeSante up?
Armand.
Look the way he played Gotti.
I like Armand, too, and we're hoping to have him on the show soon.
Well,
but,
you know what? There are some complications with his mother. He was in one of the stands doing movie
right,
stuff.
But
it's
but Armand's been in a couple bad
How do you
books.
Know?
We don't talk about that.
Come on. What really was know? That one movie with Mike Starr that I don't like?
Oh, the one that Frank Vincent was in as well?
Yeah, what was it called again? Out?
Chicago Overcoat.
Oh, Chicago Overcoat.
Yeah, that was done by Beverly Pictures or something
Yeah, they're not around anymore.
No,
I bet.
Thank God, because, you know, they bastardized the name of our city.
Oh, did they? Yeah, they were the first.
Apparently,
it happens.
Apparently
it wasn't
nobody...
Jeremy Piven that bastardized the name of our city first.
No. Well, let's just throw this out here, but apparently Beverly Pictures doesn't know how to say cut.
Yeah, I love the editing in that movie where they just the guys are like turning towards the camera and they're like, "What's on the catering table, cut?" it's funny.
You love the catering table, it's don't
funny.
You, Matt?
Yeah, I love the catering table. Where's the Mr. Beef at the
you know
studio
what?
Here for catering?
I feel so sorry if you're ever in a movie.
Why?
Because they're going to have to double their budget to get the catering food for you.
Yeah,
what,
and
like
what,
John Candy never made a movie?
Yeah,
before?
And what's going to happen when I invite Turzo and Lenny to the set?
They don't want them.
They don't want them?
Please leave.
You know, I got a question.
Yeah.
You know, they say, you know, you're a redneck when, or you know, you're stupid if, all that stuff. Well, I think I've decided I know you're fat when.
Yeah.
You know you're fat when people randomly come up off the street and ask you if you'd be willing to work for food, okay?
Okay.
Come
but
on.
Shouldn't
are you, kidding
you know
me?
You're fat when you can't see your penis anymore?
Well, I can still see that, so I'm doing all
oh,
right.
Oh, yeah. You wrap it around your stomach.
I'm
that's
sorry,
what
yours
part
is
of
so
this...
small, but it's all right.
Well, no, I heard about Mikey. It's so big. He wraps it around his stomach, and that's why you think he's fat. He's not really fat. It's just extra layers of penis.
However you want to look
wow.
at it.
However you want to look at it. It's like a rope on a string. What's a rope on a string?
You are living in Disneyland over there.
Well, welcome to the Matthew Aaron Show, guys. Thanks. Hopefully you don't tune out now.
No, people are now Googling your picture on the internet. They're like, I want to see what this dick wrapped around a stomach looks like.
By the way, for anybody who's wondering, the internet pictures are my post-fat pictures. I actually used to be fatter.
Oh, man. My chair's screaming over there. You used to be fatter?
Oh, solid oak. I think it'll do all right.
I see a crack in there.
No, I never said Armand DeSante isn't talented, Cesar Marconi. I said he's been in a couple movies that I did not care for, but I love Armand. He's fantastic.
Yeah,
but American Gangster is not better than Jackie Brown.
You know what? Well, that's true.
Yes, it is.
No, it is not.
There's you living in Disneyland.
Let's not have this argument. That's irrelevant. What is relevant is, you know, one of the things maybe I do respect about Armand is that maybe he's an actor because he loves to do it, and he did movies that people want him to do, and he does it because he likes to.
You know what? He played the most.
He does it because they pay a nice paycheck, Mike.
Well, that too. But he played the most convincing role of Gatti.
His role in Gatti.
He's not going to be as good as Travolta.
You know what else he was in that was good?
Okay.
He was Two for the Money. Did you ever see that movie?
Yep, Two for the Money.
He played
Pacino and McConaughey.
Yeah, he played an unbelievable role in that for the short time he was in there.
Yeah.
I mean, he was intimidating.
He's got the look.
Travolta don't got the look?
No.
Not like Asante.
No. He doesn't
Asante,
have the look, period.
You know what? He's the nicest guy. We had dinner. It was great.
I heard a rumor. Travolta is going to play the same role he played in Old Dogs as Gatti.
Oh.
Yeah. No, I heard that rumor. He's good.
Travolta's a great actor. He's a good actor.
In Old Dogs, was
he
good?
No, but he was a good actor.
He is a great actor.
I know Terzo loves Wild Hogs. That's like his dream.
I've actually never seen Wild Hogs.
Put together a little biker gang with him, Lenny, and...
I thought you were talking about a bunch of pigs running around.
No, well, that's what our movie...
We wouldn't be on Harley's, we'd be on Vespa.
What's funny was we had a movie in the works called Wild Hogs, but it involved no motorcycle.
It involved you guys running around the city sweating. Trying to get on elevators.
Like the Bulls of Pompeii.
Yeah.
But you know, did you see the movie Swordfish? I know you're in the movies.
Yeah, that's
good
where
movie,
Halle
right?
Berry's naked.
Great movie, right?
It's crazy.
I heard she got paid $50K a boob.
I heard she should have gotten paid $50K a boob because those things were nice.
Yeah, they were.
You didn't
were.
Think so, Mike?
No, they were pretty awesome.
But Travolta played it. You know what? He played a great role in that movie.
No, he
plays a good bad guy.
He does. He plays a great bad guy.
Face Off.
The first Punisher, he played a great bad guy. But the reality of it is that's not
look John. Who's talking.
That's just
great bad guy.
That's not John Gotti.
Oh, it's not John Gotti.
Yeah, I'm on the side.
I heard Pesci's in the movie.
Doesn't make him.
I heard Lindsay Lohan's in the movie.
I heard she's. Yeah,
apparently I won't be Gotti
girl.
In the movie.
Yeah, I heard she plays Victoria, a young Victoria.
No, does she really?
That's what I hear.
But that's modern day movie.
Hey,
for
you know who's producing that movie?
Who?
Stuttering John, formerly of the Howard Stern
Show.
No, he's
not.
Yes, he is. So it's got to be a hit.
Is this going to go the way of
Stuttering John
Chicago Melendez. Overcoat?
Not with that cast. That's a talented cast they're putting together. I hear Pacino's going to do it.
They should get Armand. Well, you know what?
You know what they're doing. They're just tossing tons of money at people.
I may know why Asante didn't do it. Even if they asked him, I may know why he didn't do it. I remember when talking, he said something to the effect of he had to gain so much weight to do the Gotti movie for HBO.
What's with him and Chaz Palminteri with the healthy eating?
Well, here's the thing. It wasn't that. He had to gain so much weight that he actually started developing like problems because he was packing down food to try to get fat enough
have
to play the
Have you told them we have no problems?
Wow.
We're good. You can run a 4.7 in the 40.
Yeah, 4.7. Yeah.
That's what he told me. He told me.
I never said 4.7.
At a drive-thru,
maybe. Through the drive-thru. At my 4th of July BBQ, he told me he can run a 4.7 40-yard dash.
Yeah, I don't think I ever said 4.7, but that's
you
all right.
did say
4.7.
I never said 4.7.
You said that was your time. Lenny Cannata will confirm it when he comes back.
It wasn't a 4.7. It was,
you said 4.7.
It was a 10.7.
No, it was a 4.85.
Well, you know what, Matt? At least you got a partner to ride Magic.
4.85. I didn't ask for your weight. I asked for your 40 time.
Oh, that was it.
I asked for your 40
time. You're lucky your mother's upstairs.
Oh, come on. We're in the studio. The studio.
A.K.A. Mom's basement.
Oh, great. Wonderful. It took a while for that reference.
Wait, what are you going to do? You graduated out of the bedroom, though. That's a good thing.
Are you going through the bag of porn?
Oh, Jesus.
By the way, there's no porn. It's from the porn convention, the romance convention we went to.
Oh, he's got his lube.
Oh, would you not touch the free lube I got?
I'm sorry. I go in the bag, and I know it's from the...
Oh, my God.
Would you make sure
it's
closed before you throw it in the bag?
How many times did you use that?
I've not used it once.
You're lying.
Before I went in the bag, I felt the microphone. I didn't think it was a microphone.
Well, let me tell you about that lube. It comes right off.
Simply Slick?
That's what they told me.
That's
when
why
Louise
had to wash it off.
Yeah, that's right. They did spray it on Louise, supposedly. Why are you going to try lube on my show? On your hands, right?
Just relax. He's got to get through the door to go to the bathroom.
Oh. We're lubricating the doors.
Oh, there we go. There's the cough.
There's the smoker cough. I was waiting for that. Oh, my God. Oh, I'm laughing too hard.
Relax.
We have Michael Whitehorn, director, writer, producer of the film A Little Help, starring Jenna Fischer and Chris O'Donnell and Kim Coates and some other folks. It's in theaters this week in a limited run, and next week it'll be out by us. And he also was the creator of King of Queens. I believe he's been nominated for 5 Emmys. Wrote for Family Ties, and I believe he ended up being a consultant or producer on Family Ties as well. But Mike Whitehorn, pretty big deal calling in, along with Bruce Fretz from TV Guide will be calling in.
Bruce,
so
baby.
We're going to have quite a round table here. And by the way, where are those pictures I need to get animated?
Well, what pictures do you speak about?
Because if you don't give me pictures, I'm going to make you all
Why don't you just get a picture off of the Facebook?
Okay. Yeah.
Time out. You don't want him choosing. Second
just
off,
just take my profile picture off of the Facebook.
I thought you need a head to toe.
A head to toe.
That is
nice.
A head to toe.
Yeah, yours is.
That's a head to toe.
See, I got a lot of like head to
the
belly
one
button.
You took with Luisi and, Megan
Lenny,
the other
I
day.
I think
was
Lenny
good.
Showed up. We
like
have
something
Lenny.
Like that.
Oh, did you see that one?
Yeah, I did.
I took one with Megan too.
Yeah, when Luisi came over for one smoke and stayed 4 hours. Yeah, I saw it.
Luigi doesn't smoke.
No, I said I'm going to have one smoke. Come over for one smoke. And me, my pal Nick, and Luigi were sitting out back. It turned into 4 hours.
You know,
at 4 a.m. we all go.
Really?
4 a.m. on Monday.
Where was this?
The Monday night when you guys are too good to come over.
What was it? Yeah, it was.
I don't remember.
I'll be honest with you. I was too good to come over Monday night.
Yeah, at least I appreciate your attitude.
Monday, I was at work until 9 o'clock.
By the way, are we going to Adele's this weekend or no?
No.
By the way, you know what I was doing Monday? I was working hard with the producer of the show, Cesar Marconi.
On what? I mean, on what?
New things for the show.
Oh, wow.
Oh, here we go.
If the Kool-Aid man had a golf outfit.
Fred Couples just walked in.
Yeah, Fred Couple of weirdos. Oy vey, what are you wearing? I just got off the links.
Would you shoot that?
Where'd you play?
Why are we talking to the guy without the microphone? You played it Ruth-like, people. Are you proud?
Very nice.
Yeah, all our listeners are like, good for you.
I got bad news.
What's your bad news?
Nothing's been confirmed yet, but I might have to go in for back surgery again.
Why?
Because he didn't rest like he was supposed to.
No, because I did. When I was at the conference last week, I did some jumping up and down, and I hugged a couple people and picked them up, and I think I messed something up. No,
what did I tell you about staying in your fucking house after that back surgery, and you're out partying all the fucking time?
What? All I'm saying is this.
You just cost yourself another 10, 20 grand.
Well, insurance company.
Yeah, well, you cost them. They're going to love that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know. We're going to see. It happened a week ago. I'm hoping it comes back. I'm mostly pissed off. I want to go golfing, but that's...
Hey, yeah, would you call Kanata, see where he is?
I'm already on top of that because you don't know what you're playing in Disneyland over there.
Oh, I'm in Disneyland.
Wait, what's he looking at on the computer?
I'm on Big Thunder Railroad with you two.
You're looking at the Smurf movie? What's wrong with you? We're going to paint you blue and make you run around the city.
Well, Michael Whitehorn and Bruce Fretz will be calling in any moment.
Very
now.
Cool.
If they haven't hung up their phones already, they've been a little scared at our Panzerats talk. Yeah, go get a Diet Coke, Mikey.
What?
Go get a Diet Coke.
You need a Diet Coke?
I want a Buzz Cola.
Those are really old. They're collectibles, my Buzz Colas. Do not take my Simpsons.
There's too much sugar in there, Mike. Stay away from it.
You know what Buzz Cola is. That's from the Simpsons. Yeah. So I got like 6 or 7 cans. Yeah, you have a beer. Don't have a point, though. Those are dead. To have a High Life or a Busch.
Take a point.
No, not a point special. Dad will come down here, see him drinking one of those ambers. That's the end of the world. Oh, look at this. They're both calling at the same time. Hello, everyone's on the Matthew Aaron Show now. Who am I speaking with?
This is Michael Whitehorn.
And it's Bruce Fritz.
And Steve's got to turn up your volume so I can hear you. Okay. Mr. Whitehorn, how you doing?
Good. I'm good. Is this Matthew?
This is Matthew. I'm sitting with Pat.
How you doing, sir?
And Mikey, whenever he gets over here with his... Oh, you're drinking my Diet Dr. Pepper Cherry?
It's my favorite.
Oh, God. Bruce, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm getting a little angry over beverages here. But
yeah.
All right. Okay, so let's get right into it. And I want to talk about the film A Little Help. Because, Mike, I talked to a bunch of people, and they kind of want to know when the film's going to come out and when the release dates are, and I know they're kind of spread out. So could you help me, first of all, by telling me when the film's going to be in New York, Chicago, L.A.?
Well, it's opening Friday in New York and L.A., and, you know, I'm not sure offhand. It's like a two-week, it's staggered over 2 weeks, so it's going to be 15 cities on Friday and then another 10 the following Friday, and other than New York and L.A., which I know are this Friday, I don't remember offhand. I think at this point, if you go like on Fandango or one of those, it'll tell you. I think they're up to date on that stuff now.
Yes, I did. I know it's playing in South Barrington, which is out of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
South Barrington on July 29th. It begins.
Right, okay, so that's the second week. Yeah.
That's the one I got on that. So, Mike, tell us about how you put this film together. You're coming off of King of Queens. Did you take some time off? You get Jenna Fischer on the project, Chris O'Donnell. What was the process like?
Well, you know, I started working on it when I was still on the King of Queens, although by that point I'd kind of, lessened my role and wasn't running it the way I had been for the first 6 years. And, I kind of had this idea of doing a small film that, I had this fantasy because, doing a network show, you got so many masters to serve. You got the network and the studio and you have the stars who are, getting $1 zillion and, and sometimes can be a pain in the ass. And I had this fantasy that doing a little movie, just a very sort of small story with actors who weren't getting a lot of money, just wanted to be there, would just be this little sort of paradise, this idyllic little thing. And, this is 8 years ago that that I got this idea, and it has been just a brutal process, man. Every stage of the way, it's just trying to get financing, getting financing, losing financing, trying to get more financing, dealing with the casting. The production itself was, a nightmare in many ways in terms of the logistics. The actual film, we got on film, I was happy with, but getting it was brutal, and then trying to get distribution after that, and making those decisions. It's been 8 years, not straight through, but 8 years since I first sort of conceived it. Jenna Fischer came on, when we were first casting, when we had our original financing, and I thought she'd be great for the part. And then our financing, when the credit market collapsed, our financing was based on credit in some way that I don't really understand. But our financing went away, so I quickly got on the phone and called people who I knew personally to put some money in, and I was able to sort of cobble it together so the thing didn't just go away, and we didn't lose Jenna and everything. So there were a few points in various ways where this thing almost just kind of went off the edge of the cliff. But managed to hold it together, and it's coming out Friday, and I'm pretty scared shitless right now.
Well, it sounds like
I've seen it, and I can say that it doesn't suck. That's my endorsement.
I know, that's your
quote.
We're putting that in the banner ad.
Yeah, I mean, and my two crazy guys colleague, Brett, who never agrees with me on anything, we both liked it. So that's saying quite a lot if you know us.
Well, I'll tell you, that means a lot because, today, the reviews are all starting to come out. I guess they'll mostly come out Friday, but I'm going on Rotten Tomatoes. And, every 2 hours a new one comes up. Or we get, the PR people send me one. And I'm just like, it's some of them are good. Like, they're about half and half. And I'll read a bad one. and, you know, and a couple have been kind of brutal, and I'll just read it, and I'd go, they're right, I suck, this movie sucks, I should not do this, I quit, I'm, and then I'll read a good one, and I'm a genius, you know, I'm brilliant, I don't know why, and then I really literally believe whatever the last thing I read was about this movie. So now that you just said it doesn't suck, I know, that's what I believe.
No, now you're brilliant again, you're Ford Coppola. No, but you know what? That was a good indicator for me that I'd like the film. Well, I've always liked you. I've liked your work on Family Ties. I loved your work on King of Queens. But when Bruce and Brett, and they never agree on anything, and they don't like movies. I don't know why they're movie reviewers, because they don't like them.
But bad movies, and most movies are bad.
Yeah, they're bad. But, you know, I kind of get a vibe from watching this trailer that it kind of has a I don't know, maybe this is crazy talk. It kind of has one of those, like, French film kind of drama vibes, but with comedy. It's got comedy in it. But it kind of, I don't know. Am I crazy?
No, you're not. In fact, other people have said that it's kind of like European in certain sort of broad stroke ways. I mean, it's very, you know, obviously it's set in contemporary America, but in terms of, you know, there's a lot of sort of, you know, there's comedy in it, but it's also more dramatic and a lot of melancholy in there. I mean, I remember sitting in the editing room, you know, editing and going, Jesus, you know, I'm a melancholy motherfucker. This thing is really, there are moments that are really, you know, just kind of, but I don't know. That was just sort of where my head was at when I wrote it. But I think you're right. In fact, you know, this guy, Professor Brown, who runs a film series, said the same thing when we screened it there, that it did have a European kind of a feel to it. So, you know, I think you're right. And to pick the, it's good, you know, get that from the trailer even is impressive.
Yeah, well, I kind of get a feeling, you know, Bruce was lucky enough to get a screener, me not so much. But I got to tell you.
I would have sent you one if you never asked me for one.
I'm a moron. But I will tell you, I have listened to the whole soundtrack off of iTunes. You can go on iTunes and download the A Little Help soundtrack. And I know a lot of soundtracks, people think it's just like orchestra music or whatever. There are three great Jacob Dylan new songs on there. I believe they're new. And and then they got some old classics on there, too. And then, of course, you got the theme and everything. But the soundtrack is fantastic. How did you get Jacob Dylan involved with the soundtrack?
You know, about a month out before we were going into pre-production, I was driving in my car and I had the iPod on shuffle, you know, so anything, you know, could come up at random. And I had, you know, a couple of Wallflower albums in there. Yeah. And a Jacob Dylan song came on, an obscure one, not one of his hits, called Health and Happiness. And my head was so into the movie at that point, and I said, oh, my God, that's just a great vibe for the movie. His voice, it's almost like, you know, he was in the song, he sings to some woman, and he's kind of giving her a hard time in his way, in the way Jacob Dylan does it, you know, kind of sarcastic and the wordplay and everything. And I thought, man, that would be great in the movie. We inquired about getting that song, and, you know, the publishing rights are so complicated and expensive and these things, so it wasn't possible. But then the producer suggested we just ask him if he wants to compose music for the film, which I hadn't thought of. And, in fact, he had been in, you know, as a coincidence, been thinking of trying to get into doing composing music for film, and he read the script, and he was definitely into it. And so, you know, I sat down with him, and after we shot the film and went through it and sort of gave him a sense of what kind of vibe, you know, I'd want where, and he just nailed it, man. He wrote these three songs. He wouldn't, you know, at first he said he would let me sort of hear demos, but then he didn't want to, and I literally hadn't heard a thing until I was driving to the recording studio the day that we were recording, he was recording them. And I just, you know, I thought this is either this is going to be just a fucking disaster or it'll be great. You know, I just didn't know because we'd already paid him and, you know, we just had to take whatever he was going to give us. But it'd be, you know, as you heard the songs, and they're all really good songs, and they really work well in the movie, I think, too, where we use them.
Yeah, I don't mean it as an insult to the Wallflowers, but I mean I didn't know it was just Jacob Dylan. I thought it was the Wallflowers, because they're that good. They're that good. And, yeah, I'm a big fan of the Wallflowers, too. That's why I even brought it up. I love their music. So that leads me then to ask you, how was it – was this ever set up at a bigger production company, and did you just decide to – like, how did that go, that process? Like, how did it set up?
Yeah, the first time, you know, when I first wrote it, my agents sent around, and these guys, Ron Yerxa and Albert Berger, a team of producers who do pretty big indie stuff. They did Little Miss Sunshine and Little Children, I think, the thing with Kate Winslet. They, a bunch of stuff that is financed through studios, indie arms, and at pretty high budgets for indies, you know, $10 million or $12 million. And they liked the script and wanted to try to get it going. And one of the realities of it, to get it financed that way at that level, was that the lead part had to be played by an A-list movie star, else, you know, you're just dead in the water if you don't do that. So, you know, we put together a list of the people who they thought the studio might be interested in. And, I just didn't really like any of them for the part. I mean, they're good actresses, but none of them felt quite right. And, you know, in one case, so we'd submit it to this one or that one. And it's funny, we'd be submitting it to these actresses, and I'd be sort of secretly rooting they would pass. And they all obliged. But one of the absurdities of it was that Drew Barrymore's agent called and pitched her for the movie. Thought, oh, this would be great for Drew. She wants to do more serious kind of work. And I thought, I don't think she's a great actress. She's cute and she's appealing, but I don't think this part really required some chops, you know. But I got talked into it by these producers and waited 6 months or something. Not 6 months, but like 2-3 months. And she passed after I had to be talked into even submitting it to her. So at that point, I just said, you know, and then plus there were also other things going on as far as like changes I might have to make to the script and all of that to give it a little more conventional feeling. And it's sort of starting to really go away from the reason I had wanted to do it in the first place. So I took it back from these guys and, you know, no hard feelings kind of thing. And I put it in a drawer, and I was going through a divorce at that time. So I wasn't kind of in my head on straight to do anything. And then these other producers who were much smaller, just starting out, Joe Gressis and Dina Heisel. And I knew Joe because he had edited this cartoon I had done, and they were starting this company and asked me if I had anything, you know, in my drawer, basically. And they liked it, and they wanted to produce it. And I said, well, if you can raise the money, you know, a couple $1 million or something. And they did, although then that financing fell apart. But then, you know, they were bored at that point. So, it really is a movie better done at that level, I think, $2-3 million than more.
Now, Mike, was this cartoon the cartoon about the talking testicles?
Yeah. You've seen that, huh?
I told Matt about that today, yeah.
Bruce introduced me to it today, and I go, you know what? I like this, talking testicles.
Did you look at it? Did you check it out?
Yeah, and I wondered, was it purposeful that one hung lower than the other? Like, I was kind of wondering, like, what the process was when you're doing testicle comedy. Like, how familiar were you with the product?
We're all intimately familiar with the product. Nick Bakay, I don't know if you know Nick, but he's a really funny guy. He was an actor. And do you know Nick?
Isn't he a comedian?
He's a comedian. Well, he's not a stand-up, but he's done a lot of comedic acting. He's a writer on The King of Queens. He had a show on ESPN and the NFL Network. He's a big sports guy and brilliantly funny guy a good friend. And we came up with this idea, and we really just wanted to make it a true buddy comedy and give these guys a real well-defined relationship. And one of the aspects of that was that, you know, if one of them had sort of descended late and he was sort of the more kind of younger, newer, more naive one, and the other was more grizzled and had seen been around the block more, so to speak. And it was a lot of fun to do. It really was.
I told you those ideas we come up with on the weekends aren't stupid. If you make a talking testicle comedy, we're in business. See? Now,
well, we should tell people it's called The Adventures of Baxter and McGuire, and you can find it online. Because otherwise, everyone's going to be Googling talking testicles, and God knows what they'll come up with.
Baxter and McGuire, and they're all on we did it for Comedy Central website when they were all about, you know, developing original web product, and then they abruptly stopped. And they dumped all their content on Adam Films, which is where you can find these now.
Yes, Adam Films. And, speaking of testicles, Bruce, what is this I hear about you, Jeremy Piven, and Merkin last night?
Wow. I gotta
I was at the Entourage premiere last night, and I got into it on Facebook with Brett, as I usually do. And we got into talking of toupees and bad toupees and Jeremy Piven and merkins, which I had to Google to find out what a merkin was. And turns out I think that's what Jeremy was wearing on his head last night. So, you know.
What is a merkin?
It's a pubic toupee.
A pubic toupee. Women wear them.
Wow.
Yeah, well, maybe men do, too. Maybe Jeremy Piven does, too, up here. You didn't know what a merkin was, Mikey.
I do
now.
You do now?
Well, no, it's funny, though, because Brett Watson, the reason I even bring that up, twocrankyguys.com, and they did a great interview with Michael Whitehorn that, of course, they posted before mine. So no exclusives here. But was it that interview that I was reading about how Chris O'Donnell ended up getting the role in the film? And, Mike, I read that you originally did not want Chris O'Donnell, and he had to kind of show you that he wasn't this, like, nice guy that he plays in all the shows and movies and stuff.
Yeah, that's true. You know, Jenna Fisher we had set her and her agency was Endeavor, and they were all over us. Like, they wanted to really, you know, get their people in the other roles and make sure that they were actors that they both represented but also liked, and, you know, that she'd be supported by well-known actors, that kind of thing. And they pitched Chris, who apparently had read the script and really wanted to do this part. And I always thought he was good, you know, but he always seems to play, at least in the movies I'd seen, you know, very sort of sweet, nice guys, you know. And this guy, the character in the movie, is, you know, he's a bit of a prick, and he's also at a very frustrated point in his life. And, you know, his short time in the movie, he's got a lot of edge, and there's a big fight scene between him and Jenna. So it didn't feel right to me just when it was mentioned, but, you know, they asked me to sit down and have coffee with him, and I met with him. I could tell right away that in real life this is a guy. I mean, he's a very nice guy, but I could tell he's got an edge, and that, in fact, I understood why he wanted this part, was that he, you know, he doesn't get that many chances to play that kind of thing. And so I could tell, you know, I got a good feeling right away. And also, you know, it helped us a little bit to have, you know, a well-known name in that role, even though it was a pretty small role in the movie. And he did a great job, I thought.
Yeah, he's terrific in it. You really see him in a different light than you've ever seen him before.
It's nice to see Chicago guys representing well.
Absolutely. There you go.
He's a better example than the last one we just named in the previous segment. I did want to talk to Mike about your resume, if you will, your resume. Family Ties.
Yeah, now, I'm fucking old.
Now, I heard that you used to be a high school teacher. Is this correct?
That is correct, yeah.
How did you get involved with, I know you got involved with one show and then you got involved with Family Ties. How'd that process go?
Well, I came out to L.A. from the East Coast, where I'm from, right out of college to try to be a TV writer, a comedy writer. That's what I wanted to do. I got, in college, I got certified, you know, to teach high school because I knew I wasn't going to drive into L.A. and get offered a job, you know, as I pulled my car into a motel. So I got this job, and it was fun for, I did it for 3 years, and it was a lot of fun. And, you know, being around teenage girls was, you know, any job where that's, you know, a factor is. And meanwhile, I was writing spec scripts at night and, you know, trying to figure out, you know, how to, you know, I'd done a lot of stuff in college, comedy, but, you know, writing, trying to write professionally is a whole other thing. And I finally got some material together. I wrote actually a Barney Miller spec script that helped me get an agent. And then Gary Goldberg, who created Family Ties, was doing a show about high school teachers, a show called Making the Grade that came and went in a blink. James Naughton, who's better known as a Broadway star, was the lead, and Gary, you know, liked my script, and, you know, we had a meeting, and it was funny because he I'd never done anything, so he'd really be taking a chance on hiring me, and he kept saying, you know, well, you were a teacher, so you'd have a lot of good ideas, you know, that we could use in the show, and I was like, you know, I wasn't really thinking of myself as a teacher anymore. I was a writer. I said, yeah, sure, but, you know, I'd love to write. And I wasn't taking the hint that he just wanted me to say, yeah, I have a lot of ideas about funny things that happen to teachers. But he hired me anyway, and that show came and went quickly. But then he, you know, liked me, and we were he was doing this Family Ties pilot that NBC wanted to do, and asked me to work on that with him, and I it wasn't hard to make that decision. So I was around from the very beginning, you know, the casting of the pilot and the original cast, and then the first 4 years of that show, I worked on it.
All right, Mike. Well, I'm sitting here now. My writing partner, who is, I think you're one of his idols. You may have to get a restraining order. Steve Weirich has now jumped on a microphone, giddy like a high school girl. He's got a
Michael.
I like high school girls. We've established that.
I'm one of the ugliest high school girls you'll see. Think Farley and SNL skit when they're eating fries. But I gotta ask. Gotta jump right in with Mikey J. Fox doing Back to the Future. How strenuous was that on the Family Ties set?
You know, it was a little bit of an inconvenience, but the thing was, he was a dynamo, man. We would rehearse the normal day, you know, and it's not a very long rehearsal day with a sitcom. You know, it's the actors are usually out of there by 3 o'clock anyway. And they would whisk him by limo to the Back to the Future set where they would shoot all night, and you know they'd dump him at home at 4 a.m. or something, get a couple hours sleep, and then he'd get picked up and brought to our stage, and he was able to pull this off for whatever it was, a few months, and when we would do our shows on Friday night in front of the audience, he was as good as ever. So this is an amazing thing that he did. So we didn't really have to make any major, changes in our production schedule. I think I wasn't on the show in the later years when they were doing, but they had the same thing going on a few years later with Back to the Future 2 or 3 or whatever. And I stopped by there one night, and the guy, Mark Lawrence, who's one of the writers who was running the show at that point, was having a long argument with someone from Michael's agent or some from Back to the Future, because they basically at that point they wanted him a lot more for the movie, and they were saying, look, he can come to Family Ties just the day of the shoot and he'll learn his lines, he'll be fine. And they were literally just basically wanting him to come in one day a week, but we didn't have that problem the first time around. He was there and he did both things, two full-time jobs, not easy ones either.
You will never hear more Meredith Baxter Bernie references than in this studio.
oh yeah, that's very true.
My question then about Family Ties, and since I'm not really a journalist or a reporter, I got to steal all Bruce Fretz's best material. Uncle Ned.
Yes.
Now I need to know whose idea was it for Tommy Hanks, and whose idea was it to make him a drunk robber, loser, criminal? This was genius.
Well, that was what. Just a quick backstory on that was when I got hired for that teacher show. It was called Making the Grade. It was in the fall of 1981, and that we were shooting that. And that was the second season of Bosom Buddies, which is a show that I really liked. And it just so happened I was working on this Paramount lot. You know, I'd never worked in show business. Here I am. I'm on the Paramount lot. Taxi is shooting, you know, 100 feet away, and you know, I'm working on this show, and on the stage, literally adjacent to where my office was Bosom Buddies. And there was a lot of downtime on this show I was working on because it was one camera show, and a lot of times I wasn't needed, and I would just go hang out on the Bosom Buddies set and on the bleachers and watch these guys rehearse, and no one bothered me, no one asked me who I was, and I just and they were brilliant. Him, you know, Tom and Scolari, like every run through, every time they would run a scene, they would ad lib different dialogue, and it was hysterical, and they were so good, so inventive. And finally, you know, after a few weeks of this, I kind of, you know, got the nerve up to go introduce myself at when they were taking a break, and they were both really, really nice guys, and I got to know them a little bit. And then so then the next year we're doing Family Ties. Bosom Buddies had been canceled, and I had this idea for this episode, you know, with Lisa's brother. He comes back and he's been, you know, turns out he's embezzled from his company to keep them from taking over a small company and putting people out of work and all that. And so we're going to, you know, make this episode and two-parter, as it turned out. And I said to Gary Goldberg, I said, you know Tom Hanks? And he said, no, because at that point, at that particular moment in time, unless you had been a Bosom Buddies fan, you know, you would have no way of knowing Tom Hanks. I think Splash had been shot but not released yet at that particular time. And so I said, well, this guy's great, you know. I mean, he's really hysterical. And he looked at some tape or something, and we hired him. And I thought we were really lucky to get him, and we were, I think. And he was fabulous. But it was only like years later I was watching like biography or, you know, some behind the scenes or whatever on his life, and they're talking about his stand up, and then he did Bosom Buddies, and then it was canceled, and apparently that was like a real downtime for him, and he had a couple of young kids, and he was running out of money, and they talked about the Family Ties gig, like that really helped get him back on his feet and get him some exposure. And I was like, really? retroactively, I was like so happy that I had like played. I had no idea at the time. I thought he was like, you know, just doing us a big favor by doing this part for us. So that was a cool aspect that came in years later. The drunk episode was the next season that I didn't write that one. That was Ruth Bennett, I think, wrote that.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe it's just me. It's really good, first of all. But second of all, when Tommy Hanks slugs Michael J. Fox, you're like, oh! Michael Ian Black and I, we were talking about that episode on the show, and Michael Ian Black, I know, was a big fan of all the Tom Hanks episodes of Family Ties. So
yeah, he was great. I mean, and actually Michael Fox credited that working with Tom as really like taking his own comedic acting up another notch, just seeing the way Tom would just massage a line and work it and work a moment and just so expertly, you know, just find a very original way to kind of make it funny. And Fox, who had, you know, he was doing really well up to that point, but he said that if you look at like the first season of Family Ties or the first part of it, and then you look at the second, you can really see his growth. You know, his timing gets sharper and more specific, and he, you know, he gave Hanks a lot of credit for that.
Now, then Michael, how do you then get involved with King of Queens, which you created? So I do know now Kevin James, he did some cameos on Everybody Loves Raymond. That's where he got his TV start. Now, were those planned once the show was picked up, King of Queens, or you knew there was going to be a pilot? Or how did that all work out, and how did you create the show?
Well, the little spots he did on Raymond were before King of Queens. He was buddies with Raymond, and Ray just put him on the show. You know, he and Ray had sort of come up together and met when they were both, full-time comics. And but as far as my involvement with Kevin, I'd just done a show that got canceled, Ned and Stacy, which was on for 2 years on Fox. Yeah. And so then it was canceled, so I was back in development, you know, and like, you know, back in that pit. And I got and NBC sent me a tape. You know, it's a typical kind of thing that they'll do. They'll have holding deals, or that they did at the time. It's not so typical anymore. But they had holding deals with, you know, half a dozen comedians. And they see, you know, they send it around to producers who are looking to develop, and they see if anyone's likes, you know, takes to anybody. So they sent me this tape with five or six guys on it, and Kevin James just jumped out at me. He said, this guy's the real deal. He's really funny. It was a great set that he had done, I think, at the Montreal Comedy Festival. And at that point, Kevin was meeting around with different producers, and we met and, you know, really connected well. And his manager, I think Jeff Sussman, really, you know, wanted me to work with him. So I, you know, came up with this idea. It just felt like, you know, a honeymooners kind of thing was the right way to go, a modern-day honeymooners sort of thing. And so we started developing that at NBC. This is at NBC, by the way, where all this was. But, you know, typically they'll develop multiple scripts for the same piece of talent so that they have a choice when it comes to picking one up. And so they had two or three being written for Kevin, including mine. And I wrote, and actually I brought David Litt in to write the script with me. So he's the co-creator of the show. And Warren Littlefield, who was running NBC at that time, didn't like my script. He thought it was too blue collar, you know. In the NBC shows, Friends, and everybody's sort of upwardly mobile and everything, and this whole blue collar feeling of the King of Queens, which felt right to me. For Kevin, he didn't like, and kept trying to make us change that, and it was just bad chemistry between what we wanted to do and what you know, he wanted to do. So he was going to order one of the other scripts, but fortunately Kevin liked our script, and his deal expired right in the at December 31st of that year, right in the middle of development season, which is unusual. I don't know why that deal was made that way. But so we were able to take the whole project over to CBS. CBS was looking, had been looking that year to develop a companion show or just a compatible show on Monday nights for Raymond, and they, I guess, liked our script better than any of the stuff they had developed themselves that particular year. So they bought the whole package, you know, our script and Kevin, and we made the pilot and did the show there, and it worked. And it was really more of a CBS show anyway, so
yeah,
I don't think NBC would have been able to program it the same way.
No, you know, we got some stories from Rock Rubin, but I did forget him to ask one question.
Okay.
What was with the cast overhaul after season two? No more Ricky Lake, no more Romano. Who
and,
else?
And Mira changed
roles. There was some Miller Boyetting going on. What happened?
Did you get it?
They may have gotten it. They're being
Let's see. They're each sort of their own story. You know, Ricky Lake, that she was actually on in the third season. And you know, CBS finally, it didn't take till like the third season before they finally just let us alone and said, okay, you guys kind of know what you're doing. But they kept sort of, they weren't too bad as networks go, but they were trying to monkey with the show a little bit. And they thought, well, it's a little underpopulated. You know, the only regulars that are there every week are the three people, which is a very small number for a series. And they said, well, you know, we should give him a sister. And we thought, well, okay, we could work with that. And, you know, we wrote a sample scene. And at that point, you know, Les Moonves just had a hard-on for Ricky Lake. He wanted to put her on the air. And I don't dislike her, but it just didn't feel right. I don't, you know. But he literally insisted. It was literally like a mafia thing. You know, you got a nice show. It would be a shame if something were to happen to her, you know. And it was really like, so we used Ricky and, plus, she was on the East Coast and had to fly out each time. So, you know, I thought she was fine for the episodes, but she didn't, you know, she didn't kind of stick. Larry Romano left because he got offered a chance to be a lead in a pilot that John Marcus was writing for Kristen Chenoweth. And so we let him out to do that. And I don't know if he looks back on that as one of the better decisions of his life. But and who was the other person you mentioned? I'm trying to remember you.
Anne Mira. Mira changed roles.
Yeah, well, she only did one episode as this woman that Jerry meets at this dance or something. And then we had cast Grace Zabriskie as Spence's mother, as Patton Oswalt's mother. And she was really, really funny. But Anne took a while to warm up to the show. At first, she didn't like that Jerry had to fly to, you know, be in L.A. so much because they live in New York. And finally, you know, once the show was established and the money was coming in, you know, Anne started to sort of get more on our side. And Jerry said, you know, maybe there's something more we can do with Anne here. So we figured we'd, you know, a good way to sort of keep her in the show on a recurring basis was to make her Spence's mother. And, you know, this kind of thing happens in sitcom. You know, people get recast. I think there was a famous episode of the George Burns, the Burns and Allen show, where they replaced an actor in mid-show, and George Burns commented on it, and, you know, like the guy was about to get hit on the head with something, and they sort of froze the action, and the one actor stepped out, and the new one stepped in and got hit on the head with the thing. You know, something kind of brilliant like that that they used to. They were really ahead of their time on that show.
Yes. Steve and I usually call it either Miller Boyetting or what was the other one? Oh, well, National Lampoon.
National Lampoon.
Vacations,
yeah.
Where the kids always change.
Yeah.
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 Well, didn't Jerry Stiller replace Jack Carter from the original pilot, too?
Yes, that's correct. That never aired, the Jack Carter.
Yeah, I saw it. I saw it, but Jerry Stiller was much better.
Right.
Well, we wanted Jerry, and we were in the, and, you know, it comes back, you know, to Anne, because, you know, we were in negotiations with Jerry for the pilot, and we were pretty far along, and then he pulled out at the last minute, and he subsequently, you know, told me later that you know, Anne had really finally just said, I just don't want you doing this show, traveling to L.A. so much, and, you know, I don't like to, so literally with less than a week to go before we were shooting the pilot, we had to find somebody else, and Jack Carter, a pretty good actor and, you know, very funny guy, but you know, he was okay, but it just didn't have the spark that we needed. And
yeah.
I you know, I remember I was in the mixing stage for the pilot, and CBS had seen a rough cut, and I could feel that the enthusiasm for this show had kind of gone out of their voices that they had had up to that point. And I just said, man, I don't want to go down like this. So I got on the phone right there, and I called Jerry's agent, and I just took a shot, and I said, listen, could I ask Jerry as a courtesy to just look at this pilot that we shot? You know, before all he had was a script to see. Now, if he looks at this and sees that, like, Kevin and Leah and how good they are together and, you know, sees the thing come to life, maybe he would reconsider. I thought the chances of that happening were, you know, 1 in 50, but why not try it? And, in fact, he for whatever reason, he changed his mind, and Anne changed her mind, and he did the show.
Now, Michael,
it wouldn't have been a show without him, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Now, Michael, now that you've done a movie, are you done with TV? Are you done with sitcoms? Are you done with networks? Are you moving on? Are you going to do something more? Are you going to step into drama? Are you going to do cable? Are you going to do movies? What's the plan?
I don't know. I really don't. I actually have a TV project. I did a pilot. I found these guys really very talented young comedian filmmakers. They'd done a bunch of short films that won awards, and one was at Cannes, and they're from Minnesota originally. Now they're out here, and really good guys, and I really like their sensibility. And we wrote a pilot for FX that about their sort of loosely based on their life growing up in rural Minnesota, like a Fargo kind of thing. And FX passed on it, so we're trying to sell that script to somewhere else, and we're shopping that around. I would love to do a cable comedy. You know, I the sensibility is a little bit more, you know, you can get a little more out there with it, and also the few, you know, it's about half as many episodes. Because network shows, I just don't think I have the stamina to do 25 episodes a year anymore. It just takes your life over. So I would like to do, another comedy, you know, for cable. As far as another movie, I just don't know. This one took a lot out of me, and a lot of it has to. I know it shouldn't be this, but I'm going to see. I want to see how it does. If the thing just sort of vanishes in 2 weekends, I just slink back to TV and pretend this never happened, kind of thing.
Nothing wrong with slinking. No. We're all fine with slinking back to television. I'd like to slink into television at some point.
So, you know, I had a question, Michael. I heard a rumor when you pitch comedies over at FX, there's absolutely no laughter in that room. Is that true?
You know, it's been a long time since I've pitched anything at FX, several administrations ago. But in general, that's very common, that you go into a room and, you know, these people, they hear so many pitches, and it's all just such a business decision. They're listening for certain key words or, you know, whatever their kind of thing is, like, okay, this year we need to develop more female-oriented, or we're going for, you know, the 22 to 28, you know, so they're listening in your pitch for the key words that they're looking for, you know, of what the demo that it's going to appeal to, or how, or the sensibility, or they, you know, sometimes they want to go broader, sometimes they want to go one camera or multi-camera. So you're pitching your heart out with this thing, that the passionate idea, and they're looking for a few bullet points that sort of fit their model, and so they're not, the laughter is secondary to the whole thing. It's a ridiculous process. It really is. It's like if it were designed to create crap, you know, it couldn't be better design than it is. It's just, you know, they just pound everything into the same hamburger. It's the only shows that really remain distinctive are the ones that for some particular reason are insulated from that kind of thing. You know, you like 30 Rock, you got, well, Lorne Michaels, Tina Fey, you know, the network's not going to, you know, fuck with them, so they get to do the show they want, and it's, you know, very different and much funnier than other things.
Now, Bruce, can you do me a favor? I kind of lost my train of thought on my next question because Lenny got lube all over his $200 Tommy Bahama shirt. I don't want to know. I really can't explain this situation. There's a bottle of lube just lying around, and there's it leaked or something. Nothing like your worst fears are going on here, trust me. But, Bruce, if you could ask the next question, that'd be great.
Yeah, well, I want to go back to Ned and Stacy because that was when I first discovered Michael, and I loved that show, and I thought Thomas Hayden Church was brilliant on it, but I met him a few times, and he seemed like quite a character, and I was wondering what it was like to work with him, and then also with Deborah Messing pre-Will and Grace. What was the chemistry like on that set?
Yeah, Tom is quite a cupcake. He really is. He's you know, his comedy comes from a very deep, dark place. He's a moody guy, and you know, really like really big mood swings, and it's, you know, often very sort of hot. You know, what I've learned about a lot of actors and comedians, he wasn't a stand-up, but often with stand-ups, it's true, is that you know, their first reaction to any script is that this is I'm going to, somebody else wrote these things for me to say, and I'm going to go out there and humiliate myself and not be funny. You know, their worst fear in life, and the showrunner's job is to sort of massage them and get them through the week to sort of make friends with the script and help them see that they can in fact get laughs with the material. You know, one of the problems with Tom for me was that he drive me crazy because we'd write a line, he would do it in the run through, it'd be hysterical, get a huge laugh, and he'd be done with it. He'd be bored with it. We hadn't shot the show yet. You know, we had a few days, so he'd be ad libbing other lines or embellishing the joke or adding layers to it that made it make no sense. And you know, my thing about Tom, you know, the fictional exchange between me and him that I imagine that he would say to me, Michael, this joke on page 22, it's just not funny. I say, well, what do you mean, Tom? It gets a huge laugh. And he'd say, yeah, but not until the end. Like he wanted like the middle words to get some laughs too. But he was, you know, he was so good in the show. He was so uniquely funny, and you know, I mean, I kind of got a sense that he was a weird guy when I first met with him, but you know, there was just nobody else on the horizon who I knew would be a tenth as funny and original, and you know, and I loved him. And Deborah was just a unknown in New York, and she just had that sort of that thing, that look in her eye, you know, that she was just kind of was gonna make it, you know. And she had something. I had her comedy often tilted too broad, and I had to kind of sit on her and try to make her play things a little less Lucy-ish, who was her idol. And funny, when I would watch Will and Grace, you know, after our show was over, I would see that they were kind of letting her go. You know, she would get very broad with stuff. But it was a really fun show, great writing staff, and really had fun doing it. It was a more broad and weird and absurdist show than King of Queens. And I like both sensibilities, but that was really fun. Charlie Kaufman was a writer the second season, and he was obviously a really brilliant and interesting guy. And we just had fun coming up with real crazy stuff, and Tom would deliver.
I thought Thomas Hayden Church, his performance in Sideways is classic.
Yeah. But
he's great. He's great. It's one of the, I love that movie. I know some people aren't as into it as I am, but I think Sideways was fantastic. I thought it was
agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's one of the great male bonding films of all time.
Yeah, I like movies like that. I like there to be a little drama in my movies. I'm not a comedy guy with the movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. There was just a right, great balance in that movie between the comedy and the drama. It all was kind of seamless, and Giamatti was great too. It was really, really a well cast and well done movie.
And Steve has another question for Mike Whitehorn. Go ahead, Steve.
Just a quick question for you. What kind of chemistry did you have with your writing staff when working on King of Queens, or any show for that matter?
Always great, because obviously I would hire people that whose sensibility I liked, and you know, once in a while somebody wouldn't work out, you know, just whatever you would get from their script or a meeting would not turn out to be what you thought. But generally, I developed, actually David Litt and a guy named Tony Sheehan, who had started out as one of the main writers on Barney Miller, had been on Ned and Stacey with me, and then when David co-wrote the King of Queens pilot and was on that show, and then Tony Sheehan as well, and hired a few, Rock Rubin, who's Kevin's friend, who we grew up with, who Kevin, really wanted to get on the writing staff. And at first, you know, you're always a little suspicious of, like, the star's buddy he wants on the writing staff, and like, oh my God, what are we going to get saddled with here? But, I quickly saw that Rock was a really talented and funny guy, and he was a great addition to the staff. Had a different, you know, angle on things than everyone else, which is great, because they all complimented, you know, everybody sort of complimented each other, brought something different to the party. Nick Bakay, just brilliantly, hysterically out of the, you know, there's like guys who are good writers and are funny, and then there's these guys who just are out of the box, crazy, like out of left field funny, and David Litt was like that, Nick Bakay was like that, and you know, you just get these really brilliant lines and ideas from them, and so I just love the King of Queens staff. One of the hardest things about, you know, doing this movie has been not having that kind of rhythm, you know, that camaraderie and being in a room with people like that. And, you know, we would laugh our asses off about stuff that had nothing to do with the show, but like that kind of laughing where you just, you can't catch your breath, you know, for a few, you have to like get up and walk around just to kind of get your, you know, you're getting dizzy because you're laughing so hard. And it's very therapeutic, and it just doesn't come up in life that much to be able to have something be that funny. But when you get a room of really funny people and some bit gets going back and forth, usually some really, really sick, twisted thing, you know, and it's just great fun. And I miss that, I got to say.
Yeah, well, I always thought that had to be like what kind of makes a show successful is when there is a great chemistry in the writing room. That's got to – are you eating all my fucking food? I swear to fucking God – I'm not. Oh my God! Those are my little Debbies.
Did you ever have anyone eat your little Debbies while writing? Like, were you one little Debbie away?
Yeah, unlike this writing room, Mike. Yeah, and you need to put salt on those nuts. By the way, I'm done eating those almonds. There's no salt on them. What do I look like here? Who makes salt-free food? Lenny brings over these natural raw almonds. Like, I give a fuck.
Just put salt on them.
Yeah.
Got a salt shaker there.
Thank you. Mike says put salt on them. I asked you a million times to put salt on them for me.
Tell them how many you ate.
I ate half the bag. But still, they needed to be salted. Oh, I'm fat. I'm going to eat half a bag of whatever, but, you know,
oh,
I would have had a whole bag with salt. Anyway.
Yeah, let's get off the food train. I'm being nerdy.
I'm
learning so much right
now. I'm never off the food train.
Well, it goes double for me. But still, digress.
So, Mike, you have a little help coming out, and that's going to be this Friday in New York and Los Angeles. Did you do the premieres already?
Yeah, we had a premiere in L.A. last week at Sony, actually. And it actually got a lot of press because Jenna Fisher's like 8 months pregnant. So that became the big story. And then they would mention, you know, a little tiny type premiere of A Little Help, you know. But it probably got us more press than we would have gotten if she wasn't pregnant. So.
Well,
Kevin James was there too, right?
Yeah, Kevin came. I asked him to come just to, you know, juice up the press. Also, but, you know, he's a friend, and I want him to see the movie, too.
No Leah Remini, though?
I invited her, and she didn't come. I don't know why.
She didn't come?
What's
up with her?
I did.
With the talk?
You know what, though, Bruce? I did see her on the talk saying she saw Zoolander a few weeks ago. She was at the premiere of Zoolander.
What?
The movie was Zookeeper, but she did say many times, I saw Kevin's new movie, Zoolander, the other
day. No.
God bless her.
God bless. Oh.
Hey, you know what? If I worked on that talk show, I'd be losing my mind too. Slow.
Yeah, that's.
You got Sharon.
Yeah, that's a rough one.
Yeah, you got Sharon Osbourne with her bare feet everywhere. Who does that? Who does that? Who puts their bare feet on good furniture? My mother.
I'm with you.
Plastic would go back on our furniture if I ever put my feet on.
Oh, your mother. She'd kick your ass first, and then the plastic would come out.
But you know what? I love Leslie Moonves. So God bless Julie Chen. Leslie Moonves needs to give me a show. So
there's the Les Moonves plug of the day.
No, we had a Les story already.
Oh,
Michael Whitehorn was talking about his hard-on, which I'm sure we never want Les hearing.
A hard-on for Ricky Lake, no less. That's got to be a first.
That's a first.
Oh, Michael Whitehorn's getting real quiet. I like all these people. Oh, I have no career. I have nothing. I'm done. You know what, though? We interviewed Rock Rubin last week,
he is
one of the greatest guys. I'm assuming, Michael, you and him are still good friends, right?
Yeah. He came to the premiere the other night. Yeah.
What a nice guy.
Yeah,
he's done movies.
What's that?
He's too good now. He moved on to movies.
Yeah, but he's and Nick actually. He and Nick, I think they all and Kevin all wrote Zoolander. And I think they were both involved in the new one he's got coming out that he just shot, the mixed martial arts one. I forget the title of it, but
yeah, they both wrote it with Kevin.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
Yeah, Rock's great.
Yeah,
Rock is great.
You guys should do another show together because I'm out of TV. I'm out of TV, Mike. They canceled.
Yeah, now that Men of a Certain Age is canceled. Come on.
Yeah, Jesus. You believe that?
Done.
No.
Yeah. You try to do a show with just a little bit of kind of, you know, human sensitivity and insight and nobody killing anybody or anything. And they just.
I am the most sensitive guy you'll ever meet. Just don't ask anyone in this room. I'm a very sensitive gentleman.
Well, you love the show, Matthew, and you're in your 20s. I mean, it's not a show for old guys. It's not, people just kind of treated it like, oh, it's just guys whining about their prostates or something. But that wasn't what it was.
No, they didn't get it. Well, it was a hard show to market. I used to blame TNT. Now I don't so much. But, it just wasn't the right network for it. I don't know. Mike Royce emailed me yesterday, one of the nicest emails I've ever received. And, he was... He was saying he's hoping it gets picked up somewhere else, but it's a long shot.
Yeah. It's funny. I communicated with him and Ray when, just expressed my condolences, and they said they were shopping it around, and then got me thinking, like, where else would this show fit? And it's really hard to think of a place,
AMC, maybe?
AMC passed on it today.
They did? Yeah.
Yep. They officially passed on it.
Fuck AMC. I never liked them anyways.
You sound like you've just been broken up with. Fuck you anyways. We're not going to date.
I do like Breaking Bad.
You do like
And Bruce Loves the Killing.
A pantsless Bryan Cranston? Who would have thought? He's never pantsless.
Hey, King of Queens, Bryan Cranston.
Yeah.
Bryan Cranston, that's right. He was brilliant on the King of Queens.
He was, man. He just came in to read. We had this part of his neighbor and we had a session, and he came in. We had a bunch of guys come in. They're fine, and then this guy comes in, and I look at the casting director. If he leaves, this guy, him. This guy's, what is he doing coming in reading for this? This guy is fucking amazing. He was so funny, so good, and it doesn't surprise me one bit that he's at this point become a huge star, because the guy's loaded with talent, and a really good guy too.
Great actor.
Yeah, great actor.
He's great on Breaking Bad. I mean, oh.
Oh, man.
So good. So Men of a Certain Age. So you need to do something for me, Mike, because I'm down to, what am I down to, Steve? Breaking Bad, Mad Men,
Justified.
Rescue Me, and Rescue Me's Ending, and Justified. I'm done. I'm done. I have no comedies now.
Yeah.
I have no comedies.
Now you don't like 30 Rock?
I liked 30 Rock the first three seasons, and I never started not to like it. I just started tuning out. I felt like I saw it all.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I get that way with shows where it's like there's nothing wrong with it, but you're just like not compelled to watch it.
Right.
The way it used to be.
I had to force myself to watch The Office this year. I had to literally force myself, and I'd watch it in like four episode bunches, and it was sometimes very painful. And it was disappointing for me. It was that was a great show, but I mean, there's nothing right now that really jumps out at me. The 2.5 Men. It's not my cup of tea, really.
No.
I like Community. I like Community and Modern Family, and I actually like The Middle a lot. There's a couple shows, but I mean, network comedy. At least there's a few. I mean, network drama is totally dead. There's nothing. I mean, it's all cable. There's when The Good Wife is the best network drama on TV, we're in bad shape.
I'm going to turn off my mic. I love The Good Wife.
Yeah.
The Good Wife's one of my favorite shows.
You would like a good
wife. It's not in the same league as Breaking Bad and Rescue Me. And I mean, it's just not.
It's
a network show. It's a soap opera.
Right. I'm trying to cancel the hotness of Juliana Margulies out of my head.
Well, there is that.
Yeah, and then...
I'll go along with you on that.
Christine Baranski just turns me on, of course. But
Friday Night Lights was—I love that show.
That was a great show. Direct Gone.
I don't have direct speak, and I can't watch The Images now either.
You can't watch what?
Yeah, I know.
Damages. Maybe when I move to L.A. in a couple months, we'll get the DirecTV.
I'll chip in.
I hear it's no good, though.
No?
Yeah. I heard on the Facebook people always bitching about
There's
the DirecTV.
Source?
The Facebook is
That's
my
your source.
That or the Twitter.
The Facebook.
Pat,
are we going to get into the defriending thing on the Facebook? Come on, I thought we were getting into this.
I was going to try to be polite and leave that.
I'm happy to talk about that. And I wrote you that note, Matthew, and I, it's true. I know.
I'm busting balls.
That's all right. You know, I have 300 people, and I know almost all of them. I'm not like one of these. I don't collect Facebook friends, you know, at all. And
I only collect,
you know, and I was starting to get, you know, somebody, two people actually were just that had friended me, like with notes about, oh yeah, I like your work or whatever. And I'd say, all right, I'll friend this. And they were just leaving like weird shit on, you know, posts on my wall. And so I went through one day and I just said, you know what? Only people that I know personally that I've met, and so you got caught up in that, and I apologize because you're obviously a real good guy, and it was nothing personal at all, and it wasn't directed at you personally. So, and
no,
we're friends
the same
again.
Thing to Steve, so don't feel bad. I did the exact same thing to his friend Steve. So
I love how the two of them got together, concocted this little story in there. All right, we deleted people we don't know. All of 1,100 of Bruce's closest stayed on.
Let me tell you, the thing about Facebook friends, they're like pogs. You got to collect them.
Yeah, you got to
collect them. Come on. Oh, no, I just made a pogs reference. I am Milhouse Van Houten here.
Yeah, you know what? No, I was fine with the whole Facebook drama. It was okay. I thought maybe I pissed Michael off, though. I'm like, oh.
No, you didn't. I didn't.
There goes my acting and writing career
gone.
In the toilet.
Oh, yeah.
Because in my mind, Whitehorn has that kind of power.
Oh, yeah.
He'll laugh at that.
Oh, yeah. Come on.
He'll laugh, but in my mind, he makes two phone calls, and I'm done.
No, you know what? Listen, I've been out of TV for 3-4 years now, and honestly, they don't know who I am. It moves so fast, man, and so I'm, you know. I mean, I did this pilot for FX. I would have thought, hey, you know, I was a little arrogant, like, yeah, you know, they're probably all kind of stoked that I'm doing a pilot for them. Guess not that much, because they passed on it. It's a tough business, you know, and it really, you know, networks are under huge pressure. The marketing people have huge power at all these places as far as, you know, telling the head of the network, you know, we can sell this or, you know, or not, as opposed to putting it on for creative reasons. And, you know, it's just a brutal business to get anything on, to keep it on. I mean, you know, men of a certain age, the most recent example of, you know, you do a great show and it doesn't matter if they can't get people to watch it. And, you know, I guess if you can understand that, but it seems a shame, you know, really. You'd like to think that that quality could win out at the end of the day, but...
Well, I don't feel hopeless at all now. Thanks. No, I'm good. I'm good. I feel really good.
Up the antidepressant prescription. And you'll get
on a happier note,
yeah.
even if I never get a show made, I know I could go to a Mike Whitehorn BBQ because he listens to the same tunage I do. Mike Whitehorn also put on the soundtrack of this movie, and I know he's into this, is Dion and the Belmonts. I think you just used the Dion song, though, Run Around Sue. But
Dion's in the movie, too. Dion's got a role in the movie.
Does he?
Ooh.
Yeah, he's great.
In the movie?
Guess. Yeah, the song figures prominently in the movie. Actually, the version on the soundtrack is a new version that he did actually probably about 10 years ago. He didn't do it for the movie, for our movie, but it's not the original that everyone's heard a million times. So he redid, but he's in the movie because like there's a kid in the movie who's a you know, great guitar player, and his dad runs a radio station, so he brings him down to meet Dion. Dion did it, and he's pretty good. You know, he can act.
By the way, Kim Coates is in the movie. Fantastic casting there, too.
No, he's awesome, man.
Yeah, he's awesome. Love him. Great.
And a great guy. He's really funny.
He's in Entourage this season, too. He's great on Entourage this season, too. He's everywhere.
Oh, he's in Entourage? Uh-oh.
Oh, boy.
I may have to watch it with both eyes.
Huh.
Pay attention, not text during the whole thing, just so I can keep up with my friends.
Well, he's canceled out by the fact that Andrew Dice Clay is also on this season, but Kim Coates is great. So,
how did Andrew Dice Clay get a role on Entourage?
I know.
Oh, Terzo, fart somewhere else. I heard that all the way over here. Go to the corner of the room.
You got an unruly mob there.
Yeah, you're on timeout. I got a whole bunch of fat Italians sitting around me. Ancho over here. Oy vey.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Terzo. That's why you're so fat. Oh, my God. It was like an earthquake in here. A little humble. This guy bent over. Terzo, I've never told this story. Have I told the story about how you sent me a picture of your back surgery with your ass crack in it? And I told you I'd buy some flowers for that vase you were displaying? Holy, that was 400 pounds of ass crack that popped on my phone. Because when you download something on your phone, it just pops up. You don't have a say. It's not like the old AOL days where the porno pictures download slowly. You could see halfway through, you don't want to see the rest of this chick. Well, Thurzo sends me this picture of his back surgery, huge ass crack. I thought it was a crater. Jeez Louise. Oh, you know what? I feel bad having Mike and Bruce on anymore.
I do too, actually.
You know what?
Look what you've subjected them to. This is.
I've had enough. I got one guy spraying lube all over himself. I got another guy setting off Richter scale.
Quite the prompt cheer, as it were.
Yikes, Mike.
I find it very entertaining, actually.
Well, Mike, you're more than welcome. We're moving out to L.A. in a few months. You're more than welcome to sit in on a show, have a roundtable with us. But
are you moving out? Great. Yeah, where are you now? Are you in Chicago or New York?
I'm in Chicago.
Okay.
Halfway there.
We're halfway.
Are you in your mother's basement right now?
Listen, Bruce. Don't give out company secrets. Yes, I'm in my mother's basement in Wayne's World Aurora over here. Everybody calls this Wayne's World. If you want to see these fatties play street hockey, okay. There's no Tia Carrere in my life either, I'll tell you that. But yeah, we're going out to L.A. in December 1st is the move date. That's at the latest. I had an agent ask me to come out tomorrow the other day, and that's not happening. But it was nice.
Oh, yeah.
It was nice to feel wanted. I probably am going to regret that in like 5 months.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
When they're not interested
in me anymore.
When we're
living in Koreatown.
When they've heard me talk too much. So, no, it was great having you on, though, Michael. And your movie comes out in New York and L.A. this Friday, A Little Help, starring Jenna Fischer, Rob Benedict, Kim Coates, Chris O'Donnell. No, Pat DiStefano is not in it. Would you stop? And then next Friday, I'm taking the crew. We're going to South Barrington. We'll see it there in Chicago, Chicagoland area.
Cool.
All right. I'm excited about that. Bruce, thank you. Do you have anything else, Bruce, for Michael?
I wanted to get a little bit into the whole 9/11 aspect of the movie just because I think it's so interesting that, you know, there's that theme going through it, sort of coming back to the Rescue Me thing. I mean, I'm curious. You told me a story when we were having lunch about how that idea came to you. I was wondering if you might repeat that for the Matthew Aaron audience about the birthday party with Dan O'Shannon.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because there's this whole kind of storyline that's, you know, there's some comedy in it, but it's more of a serious thing of this kid whose dad dies. It's right after 9/11, and his dad just dies of a heart thing, but he's in a new school, and he's just kind of an overweight kid, and he's getting teased, and, you know, just in a desperate attempt to sort of be popular, he lies and says his dad died in 9/11, and, you know, and that lie is carried on for a while before it's sort of blown. And, you know, the whole plot of the movie was sort of put together from different pieces of ideas that I had for this. And this particular one, I had a birthday party for my daughter, and this was also right after 9/11. And another guy, this guy Dan O'Shannon, who's a really funny comedy writer, he's on Modern Family at the moment. You know, he's a friend of mine. He came, his daughter's same age, so we were at the party. And we had this, like, face painter, you know, a lady who was doing little flowers and whatever they do. And we were just, Dan and I were bored and just kind of, you know, it was good we had each other because we were just, you know, making sick jokes about everything and hanging out. And we were looking at the face painter and just thought, like, you know, one kid requested a flower, another one, like, you know, his name and this and that. One could just wanted on his back a depiction of the World Trade Center towers in flames. You know, just. And that actually became the genesis of the idea of a kid, you know, and actually there's a scene like that in the movie where the kid does it at a party to try to sort of bolster his, you know, 9/11 survivor, you know, his dad's involvement.
I guess you need some survivor street cred, you know.
Yeah. Some of the reviews today, you know, and I knew this would happen, you know, they just say how tasteless that is and everything.
Oh.
But
obviously they don't watch the critically acclaimed Rescue Me, because there's been plenty of jokes made about 9/11, though they are touchy about it too. But come on, I mean, at some point, and plus this is a storyline thing. I mean, if I was a kid, I lied a lot as a kid. Now I can't lie anymore. I'm bad at it. I'm awful at it. But as a kid, I lied all the fucking time. I guarantee you, if this happened to me and I wanted to be popular, I would have dropped something
like that.
It's
a fat kid
lie.
Yeah. It totally is. It's like you lie about your weight.
That's the great line of the movie where he says, which is cooler, 9/11 or a heart attack? And Jenna Ferris just say, 9/11's cooler. I mean, that's sick.
Exactly.
It's cooler. To, like, get away with that line. I mean, it has to be funny. You know, that's the test, you know. And if you can be funny about something as dark as that, to me, that's real brilliance.
Well, we just hope for Michael Whitehorn's sake we're not the only three people that get it, or four with Brett Watt.
And the statute of limitations has to be up on that. Come on. I mean, you know.
Oh, Bruce, clear up one thing before we let you go. When you said you were riding with some hot blonde last night and her top was down, which top were you speaking of?
On her car, the convertible. I got a ride home in a Lexus convertible last night from the entourage party from a hot blonde, but it was the car, not the blonde who had her top down, unfortunately.
They have convertibles on the East Coast?
They do.
For like the 2 months a year they can ride with them?
Yeah. It was great growth in the Lincoln Tunnel, too, with the top down. It was like I almost got gassed to death, but, you know, it was very romantic.
How bad was your hair when you got home? I can't do that. I did that in L.A., and my hair was everywhere.
Yeah.
For Pivot, it would be a disaster, man.
Exactly. There
just
you go.
Pull those plugs right out of his head.
The Merkin. The Merkin stays.
Merkin.
See if a Merkin, it's glued down.
Oh. Unless you're using Elmer's, and then it's going to, like, fly by some strands and, you know, that kind of thing.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us. Michael, we'd love to have you on again sometime. Bruce.
Sure, Matthew.
Yeah, again. Soon.
Thanks. It was fun.
Thanks.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah, I appreciate your asking me. And thanks for the plugs.
Anytime, man. Anytime. I'll be plugging it for weeks. I can't wait to see it next week.
Cool. All right.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Talk to you guys soon.
Take care.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, Steve. Now, no one wants to hear you. Lenny and Terzo get on, because I got to talk to Lenny about his lubrications. They heard your nerdery. Hey, Steve, Lee called. He wants his pretentiousness back. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just busting balls. Hey, Lee called. He wants his suspenders back. Hey, Lee called. He wants his pocket protector back. Hey, Lee called. He's a nerd. Okay.
Your buddy. You're not even on.
Everyone's my fucking buddy.
My buddy.
Hey, let's play a song, though, before we come back. We'll play a song real quick. I'm kind of in the mood. This is in honor of Michael Whitehorn.
What song?
Here's my story, it's sad but true. It's about a girl that I once knew. She took my love, then ran around with every single guy in town. Away from a run around to a whoa. She likes
away from around 2 a.m.
Situation too.
Well, you're on, so you can explain it now.
Okay, so we're
Sarasota, Florida.
Sarasota, Florida. You're on.
Go ahead.
Well, no, we had this full trip planned. You know, waiting on it for about 2 months. Marked off this weekend. Got a call late last week. Trip's canceled. Fuck.
By the way, this is Len Cannata.
Thank you, Dick.
You're welcome.
What are we supposed to do then? Okay, trip's freaking canceled. So we're scrambling, trying to find something to do, and we're like, oh, maybe. Peanuts are getting stuck in my throat.
Yeah, with no salt either.
Yeah, I know. They're kind of hard to work down. So I'm like, oh, let's try New Buffalo or Dells. Well, they don't want to go because now all of a sudden they have to pay for a hotel room because we were going to stay at our buddy's place. And all of a sudden, in addition to that, they're like, oh, there's a 40% chance of rain. Like it would have fucking mattered either way.
That's what I heard. Why are we going to Dells with rain?
You know, in either location, it's a 40% chance of scattered. There's a fucking percent chance of rain any fucking place you go. Doesn't matter.
I don't know. 30-40 is pretty good.
Jesus
That's
Christ.
A coin flip.
I say this.
And another flip. But it's
off,
a coin flip.
No, none of us are getting the bathing suits to go into, and use any part of the pool.
No, he's going to the pool.
I'm saying, what about Four Winds?
Why would we go to Four Winds? You know what this is about. That Stefano told me. You rented a car.
I did.
And you don't want to lose any money on their rental.
It's going to be, I told everyone, I'm like, we're renting the car and it's non-refundable.
Well, some people backed out on you.
What kind of car did you get?
An SUV, a Tahoe.
Now, wait, were Joe and Pat originally supposed to go on
this
trip?
Yeah, everyone was
going. So they backed out on you?
They backed out. Well, our original plan got fucked. Our original plan got fucked. And so now they don't want to spend the money on a hotel room in another location.
It has nothing to do with the money. I'm not going to the Dells. There's nothing to do up there.
The Dells are a fun family. They've got bars. They've got strip clubs. They've got a casino.
There goes my
Ducks
on
water
the Pond sponsorship.
They have better fudge than Michigan.
They have better fudge than Michigan, so you want to go to the Dells? Why can't we just go to Milwaukee for the weekend?
Are you fucking serious?
I like Milwaukee.
It's Chicago's best suburb.
Yeah.
Actually, the whole state of Michigan and the whole state of fucking Wisconsin are Chicago's better suburbs.
Hey, you forgot Indiana.
All I'm saying
no,
is...
No, it's not. That's
all
not
I'm
suburbs.
Saying is...
Yeah, it's the ghetto on the way to the suburbs.
First of all, the Dells is 4 hours away. Second of all, I heard it's going to rain. Third of all, I heard it's going to cost $400 just to sit in a room for 2 days.
We're not going to sit in a room.
It's going to be raining, according to Pat.
There's a 30 to 40% chance of scattered T-storms. There's other stuff. There's, oh my God. We still go on the weekends here. It don't stop us from going to the
and
bars.
And I did hear it's a Nissan Maxima.
Oh God.
I can't be
it's a Chevy
one
Tahoe.
Of those. Chevy Tahoe, Pat. You're wrong about the car. It was a Tahoe.
It's an SUV. They didn't want me spending a decent amount of money on the car, so I told them I was getting a Nissan Maxima. So they didn't think, like, oh, well. That's why I wanted the bigger car.
So how much is this trip going to cost me?
Okay. The hotel room is $430.
A piece?
For 3 nights. No.
Oh, continue.
Split between 4 people.
Continue.
For 3 nights.
For both days or for all 3 nights combined?
All 3 nights combined.
$430 for the whole weekend?
Yes. Plus.
That's nice.
Plus the $240 for the car divided 4 ways. That's an additional 60.
That's not bad.
So her. And then gas between us all, you figure it's $180.
You're talking like a $300, $400
no,
weekend.
No, $200 per person just to get up their hotel car.
Strip clubs?
No. I didn't talk about the extras. The extras we're going to do.
Oh, there's that.
Now, the extras are your own. Because, I mean, I
heard Fricano wants to play golf. I don't want to play golf.
No, we don't have to play
it's
golf.
It's going
to
be humid.
So we don't have to play golf. There's other stuff where we can do. Whereas in New Buffalo, either you could go to the fucking casino or you could go to the golf course. So either way, you're just losing money.
Calm down on the
fun.
New Buffalo because last year when you were in the New Buffalo,
I wanted to go wine. It was a fucking hassle.
I get a phone call about you buying 20 hot dogs in New Buffalo.
That wasn't
year.
New Buffalo. That was Brighton.
Oh, it was Brighton?
Other side of the state.
Well, what
Why
do
don't
I know
you
about
pull
Michigan?
Google Maps
you think
there?
I'm ever going to care about Michigan? Right. I give a fuck.
Hey, is Four Winds in New Buffalo?
Yes. Yeah,
it all makes sense now. I never.
Well, yeah, why aren't we going to New Buffalo then? Four Winds.
There's nothing else.
I hear Four Winds is great.
No, it is an outstanding casino.
How big's the hotel room?
Oh, because you know what? You know what? We wouldn't be staying at the casino. Because the casino is probably about $1,100 for three nights.
Ooh.
Oh.
Ooh.
No, instead we're going to stay
get
at some little resort, which looks...
I'm waiting for your dad to take care of me.
No, but what's there to do in New Buffalo besides the casino and golf?
Why don't you guys go out to Galena?
There's not even people.
Yeah, why aren't we going to Galena or Lake Geneva?
Do you know how many hills there are in Galena? And this weather, that's
what about Lake Geneva? Yeah, who cares about Galena?
I was looking to go north because it's cooler.
Yeah, who cares about Galena?
What about Delavan or Geneva?
Yeah.
No, but then you got Castle Rock. And Geneva was expensive when we looked, too.
You know, he has a Gibson. He has a Gibson thing Saturday.
Always, right?
I do.
Mikey, promote your event.
Would
you?
I have
50 a night, 240 a night on the weekend. During the summer.
So anyway, I have a big thing on Saturday night. It's at Gibson's in Oak Brook, okay, which is off Spring Road and 22nd behind the giant McDonald's. It's Gibson Steakhouse, Chicago Classic. We're doing a big cigar party with General Cigars. We're going to have a putting green out there, DJs. They're running cigar specials. You can smoke, eat, and drink all at the same time on the back patio, which is outstanding and expensive and beautiful. And we're going to be doing great. Party kicks off at about 7:30.
Party kicks off at about 7:30.
Saturday night at July 23rd.
Gibson's, Oak Brook.
Yeah,
Gibson's,
we're gonna miss the Gibson's party because we're going to be in But if I stay, Pat and Joe and I can go to – but Joe don't go nowhere. Pat, you do know it's just going to be you, me, and maybe like Vic Bomprezzi if I don't go this weekend.
Vic isn't going to come out.
Oh, girl. Okay.
No. Alex might drive up Friday night. There was an invite also extended to Alex.
Mm. Wait just a second. Alex is saying not so much.
No, but an invite was extended to him.
Did you accept?
No, he did not.
So how many people do you have confirmed going in the house?
So far, it's
him
me,
and
Mike
Fracano.
And
who's Jeff?
One of Mike Fracano's buddies.
Okay.
Nice kid.
So you're looking for a fourth slot.
Fourth and fifth, possibly.
Fourth and fifth. Well, what if I were to come? Would I qualify as fourth and
fifth? What happens to Gibson?
That comes up as fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth.
Hey, what happens?
Both of us can't. We should both share a bed.
Listen.
I feel bad for the maid.
Yeah, right. Holy shit. Listen, Farley and Gandolfini. You ain't sharing no bed. And Farley, you got Gibson's this weekend. So
I'm
what
just saying.
Wait, you're going to leave Gibson's high and dry?
Farley, by the way.
Oh, no.
How the fuck are you, Farley?
I know. I look like the bobblehead doll.
You are my bobblehead doll.
Did you guys already discuss NASA?
No.
Yeah, we did.
No, we didn't discuss my buyback programs yet. Oh, but what is your thoughts on NASA shutting
like to
down?
Hear that, Lynn.
No.
These two now Democrats actually think that we should give money to NASA.
That's a stupid comment on your part. What's the word? People can't be free thinkers. They're either black or they're white.
Yes.
Or they're either blue or they're red.
Yes.
Bullshit.
That's how people
Wait,
vote.
No, no,
you know
no.
What? I got
That's
some right
how
here
people
for you.
Vote.
Let's see if you can go.
Listen, you
were you guys arguing for the complete elimination of NASA or just elimination of the rocket and shuttle?
We weren't even. They weren't even arguing to eliminate it. They want to give money to NASA.
Okay, now here's what NASA has two big branches to. It's the rocket
Rush
shuttle
and
program,
Glenn.
The space
right.
exploration, and then the research arm.
I think, see, Len, here's
like the JPL.
Here's what
like
I
that.
Said. I said, look, we don't need to shoot people into space just for the sake of us going, yay, look at us, we're the USA. But I thought we needed to keep the space research going because there are countries like China and up and coming places. If we totally shut that off, we could be at a huge disadvantage for a global economy 20, 30, 40 years from now.
Right. The private sector has to step up with the what do they call it? The commercial launches.
Yeah.
They have to step up in that. At the same time, all of a sudden America's going to be the only ones without rockets. That's frightening.
The greatest country in the world?
No. Because you understand.
Other than Italy?
The shuttle program had to come to an end. It was only supposed to last 20 years.
How many more times can
30.
We go to the moon?
But now we had a rocket program in place to replace that. They eliminated that. Now, when our guys got to get up there, they have to catch rides on Russian rockets.
Yeah, $50 million a pop.
$50 million a pop. Now, I'm not saying space travel isn't expensive. It isn't dangerous. It is. It's all those things. At the same time, that's kind of like, oh my God, we're really catching rides on Russian rockets. You feel like a pussy.
I feel like a pussy. And it's nothing against the Russians.
Russia can't even locate half their nuclear arsenal. And we're taking orders from them?
Do we have to take another look at Chernobyl? I'm just saying.
Yeah, I mean, shouldn't we learn?
I want to talk
besides
politics,
the Department of besides the Department of Defense, NASA's actually responsible for the most technological research ever.
Actually, well, no. Actually, that's That's partially
not just
true.
Tang.
My
not
uncle,
just
my
Tang.
Uncle works for the government.
Everyone's uncle works for
the
government.
The Department of Energy. Department of Energy is the one that develops everything for the Department of Defense.
Bang!
Okay.
But he's the one. He worked on the project to develop heat in space for the space station.
Heat. Oh, heat.
Can we get back to the fact?
Like fires?
Can we get back to the fact that Steve still has a boner over here from talking to Michael Whitehorn?
Yeah, family ties. He got a little excited.
Hey, who was looking out for Steve over here? Huh?
Yes.
Thank you. You're welcome.
You know what, Terzo? I don't know what it is with you. You're either the nicest guy ever or the biggest suck-up of all time. I can't tell. Or is he a
nice
fella?
I'm a nice guy.
Well, I said it's 50-50.
You want me to be a jag-off? I can be a real good jag-off.
I haven't decided yet, jag-off. Let me flip a coin. What are you doing? Why can't I talk?
Hey, sweat hogs.
I can't hear myself.
How about now?
You know I love hearing myself.
Well, you were in the red.
Really? We never noticed.
I'm your audience.
I'm flipping a coin. Is Mikey a suck-up or a nice guy? What do you want, heads or tails?
I got an idea.
Ed, what'd you choose?
I'm going to flip a coin. Is Matt a homosexual or is he gay?
Is it a two-headed coin, too? Anyways, hey, how about you don't attack the homosexual community?
I'm not attacking the homosexual
I think
community.
You are.
Is
well,
Mike Terzo speaking?
I think you're using
for
that as
record.
A negative connotation.
I don't think so.
Oh, so you're fine with me being a homosexual?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad you decided that.
Homosexual.
What?
I think he's really just constrained.
Homosexual.
Fucking with you.
Chucky.
Chucky. Oh, I can't hear. I don't got a microphone.
Homosexual.
Homosexual.
Well, that's weird.
What am I?
Homosexual.
I'm a homosexual.
I like ham.
That's when, I like ham. I'm going to play.
Everyone bitching about those nuts. You sure to go through the whole fucking bag.
I did not. I touched a few of them.
You only touched a few nuts.
I only touched a couple nuts.
Oh, I guess
nuts.
We need pictures from the convention.
Yeah, Chucky was on the other day. Should I ask him about that?
Oh, hey.
Oh, we heard Chucky's sex stories from Vegas last night. You missed those.
Yeah, I heard you guys tell me about that.
I got... Hold on.
He's got all the porno pictures.
Hold on.
Oh, no.
You guys got...
All the romance convention pictures he has.
I got some... Actually, you guys got to look this up on the internet. You know, since this back surgery, I'm trying to do the nerve regeneration from the crap that went back in my leg. So I've been researching online ways to stimulate nerve growth. I shit you not, one of the ways science has found to stimulate nerve growth is through massaging a male's testicles.
Listen, Clavin, another little factoid. Another little factoid.
I'm just saying.
As Chef Boyardee.
Yeah, go find your own dick buddy.
Pet your balls, sir.
Yeah, your dick buddy.
Pet your balls.
Now, what do you mean by massaging the testicles?
Apparently,
like grabbing each one and rubbing?
No, they got to, like, somehow it's, that stimulates the
nerve. That could be painful
nerve.
If they squeeze
it
too
could.
Much.
So do you think men of a certain age doesn't get canceled if they talk more like this, massaging each other's testicles?
Who said you're going to massage?
Well,
you
I didn't say I'm massaging your
well,
testicles.
Well, you're talking about touching nuts. Right.
Who are you talking to, Luisi?
You weren't
even on.
He's just creating visuals.
Oh, what did he say?
Well, anyway, I thought for the guys
I didn't
who are
hear
listening
him.
Out
he
there,
say?
If any of them are older guys, they have a wife, this is a good way. Honey, I'm sorry, I have to. Prescription from the doctor.
Can we talk about these buyback programs?
Yeah. Let's
what buyback program?
Like Best Buy, all these places.
Yeah,
oh, Amazon.
Yeah, aren't you giving out your credit information when you give these things back? Because you know there's a backup drive on all these friggin' things. Aren't you giving out your info?
What do you mean? I'm not
okay, let's say you're returning a Mac or an iPhone or anything like that to a store.
They clear it out before they do anything.
Theoretically. Yeah, theoretically.
The guy who's making $8 an hour that's clearing it out.
Right. They're supposed to clear it out. But isn't this like a big risk to like give out your information?
Oh, so you're saying people are taking the hard drive.
Yeah, you do know if you erase everything on your computer, it doesn't mean it's off your computer until you get one of those programs that erases it all.
Or you just remove the hard drive.
Right. But no, you're not allowed to remove the hard drive. You have to return the whole thing when you do a buyback program.
You know, here's the question. What do you really get with this buyback program?
They give you a discount on the next thing you buy.
Yeah, what?
So if
20%? 15%?
Yeah, it's like if I turn my iPhone 3, I get like $100
towards an iPhone 4.
I'd like to say it's like $100 off, but probably not
on an
iPhone 4.
Not a chance.
I don't even think the iPhone has a buyback program.
Yeah, they do.
No, I think it's eBay. For them.
No, I think it's all Mac products.
But think about it. So, like, that means people can
Best Buy will buy back anything right now, they said. That's what they coined.
Do you even know how to go back in and...
Whose phone's on? I can hear it in my ear.
I don't have my phone on me.
You motherfucker.
You could recluster.
How could and you... Luisi. Turn it off.
Airplane.
You're an airplane.
Apologize.
You're an airplane.
I'm an airplane.
All right. I'm sorry. Whose phone is on?
Why are you so worried about the buyback program?
I think it's because a lot, like the PlayStation.
Are you thinking about turning in your douchebag Mac and getting a real computer? Or PC?
No, I got a MacBook Pro like every writer in Hollywood.
And what was that picture? Every douchebag sitting at a fucking Starbucks.
And then your asshole ass sitting with a Hewlett Packard. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
No, I'm worried about the buyback program because it'll be like PlayStation 3, where all the credit information's getting out.
That
on
was
the
because
online.
Their servers were hacked.
I could hack it. People hack into Best Buy all the time.
No,
you
I know,
could
no,
sit
no,
out
no,
Best
no.
Buy and
but
hack
these
away.
These are people who have to sit there, buy your computer, hack into your computer.
Well,
and knowing our luck, it'd be someone with a horrible fucking credit rating. So what the fuck will we get out of that?
Pretty much.
Yeah. Well, you know, I agree.
So what you're saying
is when they tapped in the network, they had access to millions of fucking.
So what you're saying is we need to start get a job at Best Buy and start.
Well, in a roundabout way, I was getting there.
Information.
In a roundabout way, we could be doing Ocean's 14 at Best Buy right now.
Is that going to be the premise for Ocean's 14? Brad Pitt, Clooney, Matt Damon.
And they all put on a little weight.
Apple Store.
You know what?
Did they all
wait for shit to come in?
Yeah.
I'm telling you, in today's day and world, that would be the way to steal millions. There's no more of this bank robbing. It's all internet.
The biggest white-collar crime in America is stealing people's identities.
I got to be honest. I'd give it a shot if I could make
it. But I don't think it's going to be done through a buyback program.
It could.
Because this person would have to buy many computers.
Maybe we should start a retail store called Recycle Your Crap.
Yeah, you know when they opened they opened those eBay stores when eBay was popular.
I sold it on eBay.
No, yeah, but those eBay stores that they actually opened, like people would
open. They're not real eBay stores. They're some budding douchebag entrepreneur.
All right.
Forty year old version.
Catherine Keener.
Douchebag and entrepreneur should not be in the same sentence.
Catherine Keener. Oh, by the way, can I leave the show with this note? So my sister met Caesar last week, Sarah.
Which sister?
Sarah.
One's Sarah?
She thinks, first she says, maybe he looks a little like Tom Hanks, but then she said, I think he's gay.
So that's how you make fun of Caesar this week.
Well, I just wanted to get it out there.
Wait,
her opinion.
You have two sisters, right?
Yeah.
Which one was the one I met?
The one that lives here in the studio is Steph.
She lives downstairs?
Ian, no, not down here, no. But Sarah lives in Tampa. But Sarah came in to visit with Pepper and Miles.
Wait, who's Pepper? Is that like a dog?
I don't know, but if she says gay. Supposed to believe now.
You think she has good gaydar?
I don't know. I don't think Caesar's gay. He's just a virgin. We love Caesar, though.
I'm going to go to Tampa in the middle of July.
What is she doing in Tampa?
Yeah.
Works at a bar. Bartender.
Well, who's she live with down there?
You know what?
Her boyfriend. Basically, I think they're getting married pretty soon. They've been together 5 years.
I got to be honest with you, man. I think we need to go down and visit your sister and her boyfriend.
I don't think you want to. Listen, the only place in Florida you're visiting, SeaWorld, pal, because we're getting you back. We're getting you back to Shamu's cage. Bush Gardens, yeah.
We should go back.
We're going in overtime, by the way.
Let's
keep talking. We're going in overtime for anyone that gives a fuck.
I'll tell Tommy and we'll get Pete.
Hey, we're going
to Mar here.
Well, we have overtime.
Yeah, where'd you get the name from?
They stole it from me on the Bill Maher.
I have a question for the entertainment gurus here in the room. What is the deal with Chelsea Lately and then the show having after Chelsea Lately, after Chelsea Lately?
Oh, it's a made-up show, too. It's not real. Like, it's scripted.
Well, I know. So, I don't get it.
They have hard-on. They have a hard-on.
Yes.
Is it really?
No, the second. Well, they're both scripted. You got to write out those shows. Chelsea Lately, they plan everything out. You know how they have content that you always bitch at me about having. That's why I come up with buyback programs.
Yeah.
So, it's all written out. The responses are...
made up.
They
have
a rehearsal, though, where they practice those responses.
They practice their maybe we should start
And
doing
then
it.
There is a second show that Mikey's talking about called After Chelsea Lately, where they show what goes on behind the scenes, but that's all scripted. It's like The Office, but with Chelsea Handler.
I think she's hot.
She's only 35, from what I've been told.
Like, really? She's only 35?
But I found out Whitney Cummings' real age. But I'm not allowed to reveal my source, so I'm going to keep...
Is she the broad with the red hair?
No. No, you're making up broads now. Yeah. Who has the red hair?
Is she the one where the curtains match?
She the Raggedy Ann looking one?
No.
Who's Whitney Cummings?
It sounds like one of the people you met at the
exotic.
Sounds
like a porn thing.
Is that the old Italian one?
You mean the
Dean
Martin ones?
Oh, speaking of Italian, I think Deanna Martin's coming on August 16th.
Very cool.
I'm not positive yet, but Deanna Martin is, she wants to do the show.
You mean Deanna Crochetti?
No, fuck, here we go. You mean Dean Martin's daughter.
Dino Paul Crochetti.
That's right. Dino Crochetti. Is that Lenny dancing?
No, that is Matt.
Oh,
wow!
Wow!
Did you just mistake me for Lenny?
I'm sorry. I
Who's more insulted right now, Len? You or me?
All I see is a flower.
Oh,
shirt.
You know whose bald spot's getting real bad is Chucky's. Chucky's is getting worse than
both
of us.
You know what's funny is you and Chucky always are like. Every time you guys go to the bar, I knew it was you because of your bald spot on the back of your head.
Well, his shines because he puts all that beef grease from Mr. Harlem, Mr. Beef on North Harlem over
here. You know, somebody should let him know
hair.
When your hair is thinning, beef grease ain't no real good
yeah,
word.
Yeah, you know what, Pat? It's not hair gel when the cover of it says au jus.
You know, me and Pat have had a rock star week in the past two in a row.
Oh, here we go. I knew my balls were...
And I'm over here like a fucking cadaver. Okay, well, you
look, I haven't gone out. Lenny, by the way, when
yeah.
I need a picture
Thanks,
for you
Robin.
For the animation, if you want to get paid.
I told you in a fucking email, just take the one off my Facebook.
Oh,
oh yeah, that's right. Everyone just says, take it off my Facebook. You don't talk to me until you talk to Vito. I emailed him.
All right.
Oh, well, when do you want to sit down? Email me back. No, we're not done yet. Hold on. I got one thing to talk. I want to talk
Anybody?
About the last weekends I missed. I want to tell you what I heard. Hey, no, of course he's trying to get out of
yeah,
here.
I don't remember getting
he's
any phone
about
calls
to,
about this.
Well,
what?
First of all, I'm putting the keys in the Greyhound and turning the ignition on.
And you're about to run me over.
So,
wait,
rumor
you
has
this past
it.
Weekend.
Yeah, rumor has it you, Pat, JF, we'll call him.
Okay.
And you go to the Moe's Cantina without me. Okay. I text you Friday afternoon. I go, you're going to the boat. You don't text me till 11 o'clock at night. And you go, what's up, pal? Him, I talk to. I go, you tell that motherfucker Canada.
I think because no, as soon as I got out of the car with him in the garage, I'm like, oh, why don't you call Matt?
Did you get invited to the wedding?
So maybe he was handling.
I got a
calls.
Post-fight to his wedding.
Maybe he was.
I got post-fights to hanging
maybe
out.
Maybe he was handling my invitations for that day.
Mikey, how was your invitation on Friday?
I don't think you received it.
Oh, non-existent.
Nope.
Hmm, must
no.
feel real
they
good.
They must have known that I was busy and I could
oh,
come out.
Oh, that's what it was.
Yeah,
I could
tell
it was.
He was busy.
He so, knew that I was at Tony Robbins.
So, but I hear Friday, I heard like Friday was just the warm-up act. Then I hear Saturday.
Oh, the night I actually could go
Let
out?
Let me tell you about, well, I was invited out Saturday by Pat invited me out. I don't know about when.
I think he was speaking for me.
Yeah.
Because I was going to be with them. I,
right. No, of,
I
course,
do.
Of course.
I don't see you in our fucking group. Why, like, say four of us are
everyone
going out.
Everyone has to text
Everyone
each other.
Has to text the other person to
hey,
go out.
You know
well,
how
well,
hard it is to put in
the
text.
The new kid decides to come out, he has to text everyone.
Well, we should leave it up to the new
kid. Yeah.
Well, see, you know what I do? This is what I do. When I'm going out, I start out with Lenny, or I start out with Matt, or I start out with Alex, and then I just make my way around the circle. And one of them finally picks up, and it makes it happen.
Yeah,
that could be.
But see, the thing is, our group, they want
that
four
sounds
in-
like Ookie Cookie to me, and
like
I'm not a
Matt
part of
wants
that.
An invite. When me and Pat were going out, he wants an invite from me and from Pat.
I want an invite. Well,
Pat,
you know, okay, I'm a celebrity.
Excessive.
I'm a celebrity.
Oh, fuck it.
I want an invite from everybody.
Don't tell me that shit. It's
and
not
on
just
Saturday,
you, it's every fucking person except
I'm
me.
A celebrity. I want an invite every night from everybody. Now let me tell you about Kanata on Saturday, though. I heard he got so fucking hammered, he's pissing off the pier. Hey,
after
you got
Pat told me to.
I hear you have a problem now. I think we need to take you to AA.
The Mayo Clinic?
I just tease. I heard, okay, answer me this. Where are you ordering pie from at 5:30 a.m.?
First of all, I asked for Chicago's. I somehow ended up at Sarpino's.
It is the worst pizza ever. Sarpino's is Indian pie. That's what I call Indian pizza.
It was tomato-based, American cheese. It was disgusting.
I kind of like it better than Pizza Hut.
They put American cheese on. No, what? No, Pie Hut is way better than Sarpino's. They put American cheese on the pie.
I kind of want pizza now. Can we?
Yeah, we could do that.
We could go get pizza? Where?
We can order a pie.
From where?
Well, there's got to be something.
Little Malnati's?
Oh, no. There's nothing.
No, Cassano's on Ogden, home of the jumbo slice.
Hold on. I have a quick question.
Oh, they still open?
Yeah, they even have a sign that says home of the jumbo slice.
While I have Downer Grove.
And it's great pie. Great pie.
Have you guys
ever... thin, crispy crust with some nice gooey cheese on it. Oh.
All right,
Cassano's.
All right, it moved a little bit. All right, enough.
That's a trademark of Bocce's Pizzeria.
Maybe you should
if Bocce's were not a business, you'd have an argument.
Hey, brick oven. Question.
We love Bocce's.
Have either one of you guys ever heard of Johnny's Beef? Not the one on North Avenue.
Yeah, the one over in...
on Ogden, behind the Jewel.
Yeah. It's awful.
I got this old guy.
It's awful. It's not North Avenue, Johnny.
But that's irrelevant. I've never been there. What I'm saying is I got this old guy at the dealership.
He plays golf with
who
him.
Who doesn't shut up. Oh, that's Johnny's Beef.
I think he was just starting to say it.
He's this creepy old guy. And he makes it himself in the back. I've never had it. Is it any good? Go ahead, talk.
It's good. I play golf with him. He's in my men's league in the golf league Sunday morning.
So is it decent beef?
Calm down, Alex.
The way Alex went.
I play golf with him. Here's the problem, Alex. I can't talk shit about everybody because you know everyone. Oh, would you stop pointing at me?
Well, Matt, why don't you wrap this up so we can have a cigarette?
Sounds good.
How many other people can we rip on before we
love
go?
Love you, folks. Thanks for coming in tonight.
Everyone.
Oh, let's play a song, though. What's this Lakeshore Drive?
Lakeshore Drive.
I'm not sitting...
Drive, and it's no peace of mind to face you, riding on Lakeshore Drive.